No, it was. Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular business meeting for Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. The time is just after 7 p.m. Liz, will you call the roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutterbach, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Gehring.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilmember Gamble. The first item that we have on our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is AB 14151. This is confirming the appointment and oath of office for the municipal court judge. I'm pleased to present Mara. You step up to the podium. This is Mara Rizzano. She is right now citizen Mara Rizzano. After she puts her hand up, and assuming that you vote that way, we can call her something else. Ms. Rizzano is qualified to be our presiding judge, meeting the requirements of the United States and Washington State citizenship. While having good standing with the Washington State Bar Association, Ms. Rizzano has a Bachelor of Arts degree in Business Administration from the University of Washington and a Juris Doctorate also from the University of Washington. Ms. Rizzano and her family are from the Monroe area, and she has spent over 20 years serving the citizens of Snohomish County as a deputy prosecuting attorney in the criminal division. Ms. Rizzano, would you like to say a few words about your experience and background and anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I started my legal career in the United States here in Monroe at Evergreen District Court, the very first court I ever appeared in front of. Judge was Judge Clough. That was well over 20 years ago. I fell in love with it. I fell in love with being in court, and I fell in love with the area all over again. I'd come back from Italy, and this was where I wanted to make my home. My husband and I live in this area. My family lives in this area. They're here to support me tonight, and I'm very excited and honored that I would be chosen to be put forth as the municipal court judge for Monroe. I know you had a number of qualified candidates, and I want to express at this point my appreciation of being considered and my appreciation of being offered the position.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Rizzano? Okay, seeing none, is there a motion? Councilmember Gamble.
I would just say the fine qualifications from the university that
speaks for itself, Chief.
I would make a motion to confirm the mayor's appointment of Mara Rizzano as Monroe Municipal Court Judge.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Judge Rizzano, welcome to Monroe.
Welcome.
Do hereby solemnly swear
that I will
to the best of my ability
perform the duties
of the office of municipal court judge
as provided in RCW
chapter 3.50
and my appointment by the mayor
and will support
The Constitution
and laws of the State of Washington
and the ordinances of the City of Monroe.
Thank you.
job.
Long reach here.
Welcome.
Congratulations.
Welcome.
Happen. You can come on up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, the next item that we have on our agenda is a proclamation for Police and Fire Appreciation Week 2014. And I'm going to read the proclamation in. So this is a proclamation, Police and Fire Appreciation Week. Whereas the Monroe Police Department and the Fire Department personnel keep our community safe by increasing public awareness of methods for crime and fire prevention. And whereas these devoted first responders show their dedication by putting their lives on the line to save lives, protect property, and uphold the law. And whereas selfless concern and the courage to endure whatever ordeal they face are commonly held values among our police officers and our firefighters. And whereas hard work and commitment is the mission of public safety, the mottos of the Police Department and Fire Department are, the Monroe Police Department is dedicated to the pursuit of excellence in providing professional law enforcement services, and the Monroe Fire District No. 3 is dedicated to protect life, property, and the environment through education, prevention, and emergency response to medical, fire, and hazardous materials. Maximum effort. We strive to accomplish this mission by maintaining operational readiness, by providing a highly trained and physically fit workforce, by promoting safety in all endeavors, and providing the necessary resources to adequately protect those we serve. Therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, do hereby issue this recognition as a true expression of appreciation and a symbol of gratitude for the exceptional quality of public service as you continue to dedicate yourselves to keeping our citizens and community safe. And do proclaim the week of November 16th through the 22nd, 2014, as Fire and Police Appreciation Week in the City of Monroe. And I urge all citizens to join me in this special observance. Thank you. Please, Chief. Chief, will you come up?
And do we have somebody from the firm here, Chase?
The next item on our agenda this evening is under presentations as well. This is Sky Valley Food Bank. Mr. Watkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, City Council. Good evening, friends. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Neil Watkins. Been in Monroe for a lot of years, ran the Chamber of Commerce for a number of years, and 5 years ago moved over and took over as Executive Director of Sky Valley Food Bank. I was asked to come and give a little update about what's going on with the food bank, and so I'm going to take just a few minutes because I know you have a packed agenda. And update you on what's going on. I thought about a PowerPoint, but since I'm old school, I decided to go old school and you have a handout instead. Sky Valley Food Bank serves our community. Our parameters, the line which we operate, is the parameters of the school district. So anybody who lives within the Monroe School District is eligible to get food at Sky Valley Food Bank. We are open Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings from 9 until 11:30. We're open Monday evening from 6 until 7. And in those hours, we distribute an awful lot of food. We are part of Food Lifeline. We are affiliated with Northwest Harvest. And we are part of the Snohomish County Food Bank Coalition. So we're very active in the community and in the food bank community. And we're very, very active in the fight against hunger. We do a lot more than distribute food. That is our main goal. That's the main focus of what we do. We distribute food that for folks that are hungry and in need of some help in that area. But we also do a lot of other things. And among them are school supplies. The children of our client base who don't have enough money to get the supplies they need for their school. In late August, we gave out just this last August over 600 backpacks full of the appropriate school supplies for each grade all the way up through high school. So that is a very big endeavor that we undertake. We work with children at Frank Wagner Elementary that are on free and reduced lunch. They, in grades kindergarten through grade two, we provide backpacks every Friday for them to take home so they have enough food for the weekend. We started the program 3 years ago with 13 kids. We went to 67 children last year, and this year we are just short of 100 children that we give weekend food to each and every weekend that school is in session. At the holidays, our tradition has been to make sure that the children of our clientele have something for them to help celebrate the holidays. So we give out, last year, over 650 children received toys from the food bank along with the holiday food that we gave their families. So not only do we give some toys, but we have little stockings for each child too that provided by one of our great donors. I don't know whether you know the Wilton family, but Diane Wilton was an angel with us, and she started this tradition a long time ago. She passed away a couple of years ago, and her husband took over the tradition. So her husband and her family continue to do that. It's a really neat story in the community. Just recently, we started for the second year to provide food for our cold shelter. The cold shelter is just open now, and we make sure that there is food and snacks at the cold shelter for the folks going there during these cold evenings in the winter. We do snacks for the YMCA, for the after-school kids. We've been doing that for a couple of years, so we make sure that there's some snacks there, and we provide food for the women's shelter in town. So these are all things we do besides the very basic thing and the very primary goal, and that is to make sure that families have food. We also have, and let me just say, in case you don't know where we are, we're right across the parking lot from the Boys and Girls Club. So we're right behind City Hall, down by the park, above the park, across from the Senior Center, and by the Boys and Girls Club. Next to us is our community garden. And that community garden is utilized during the summer months. And over the last 2 years, that garden has yielded almost just a skosh under 7,000 pounds of produce. Now, that's amazing. And the volunteers that work in there have just done a terrific job in providing us fresh produce for our client base. We've had a lot of help from Public Works, from the Parks Department, in our day-to-day work at the food bank in terms of maintenance of the property. And when we were getting that garden restarted, Mike and the crew in the Parks Department helped us a lot and gave us a lot of advice and direction to help us do that, and we're very grateful for that. We are staffed 100%, with the exception of the person standing up here talking to you. We're staffed 100% by volunteers. And we have, at this moment, 61 volunteers that work at the food bank. They do everything from intake food that's coming in, driving trucks to go out and pick up food, working our distribution line, working in the office, a myriad of responsibilities. And on any given day that we're open, we have probably 28 to 32 volunteers working. So it's a shift that starts on weekdays. They come in at 7 o'clock in the morning, thereabouts, and they work till 11:30. Anybody want to guess what the average age of our volunteer is? Try 70. It's amazing what folks can do, and there's no pay. Their pay is to make sure people get fed. And it's very gratifying to work with these folks. We are a big family, and I just love it. We do have four trucks, at least three of which are going around every day, 7 days a week. We go to the grocery stores, we pick up food, and we get donations from various food drives and such. So our trucks are out 7 days a week. Now, if you look at the exhibits that I've attached, here's just kind of a message on the intensity of the issue of hunger in our community. The first exhibit here talks about the number of individuals that we have served. In 2008, for the total year, we served 42,876 individuals. Now, I want to make sure you understand that's what we call a duplicated number. So if a family can come to the food bank every week, and every week they come, they're counted as a family. And the individuals in that family are counted as individuals. So be clear on what these numbers mean. They're still, they still have an awful lot of impact, especially when you're trying to find the food to feed them all. So it has gone from 42,876 for an entire year, for 12 months in 2008. And over the last 6 years, it has jumped. Right now, at the end of October, we were already at 43,237 individuals served. We're at about a 27% increase October to October between 08, and by the end of the year, that 27% will be something akin to 40%. And that's the increase we've seen in hunger within our city. This is just within our city. There are over a million people nationwide going to food banks every single day. And speaks to a lot of issues that we could talk about forever, but we won't today. I guess my point here is this. I've been asked many, many times, why this big jump? Well, we know in 2008, 2009, there was a dip in the economy, and that really triggered a lot of it. But there is also a huge dip in folks make what we call the working poor, making minimum wage, not making a family wage. And as that segment of the population has grown, the number of people coming into the food bank has grown right along with it. And so we can trace it back. We talk to our client base and individuals. That's basically what we're hearing. That is the majority of the growth that we've seen. The other issue we have, and it's noted in the second exhibit, are the number of pounds of food that we've had donated compared to the number of pounds of food that we have distributed. So far, year to date, through October, we have distributed 638,000 pounds of food just here in Monroe. We have only received, from donations from grocery stores and such, 554,000 pounds of food, a significant shortfall of 84,000 pounds. That's a lot of food to purchase, but that's what we have to do, especially in terms of protein and the more nutritious side. We can get a lot of bread, we can get a lot of desserts, but finding the protein and the produce, the nutritional items, very difficult, and we have to buy a lot of it. So that's basically, in a nutshell, the picture of the food bank in our town. I'm going to suggest that I'm going to ask after the first of the year to come back and talk to you about possibly a citywide food drive. They just did this in Marysville. I don't know whether you read about it in the Herald, but they just did a very, very successful food bank. The combination of the city and the food bank working together and doing something citywide. And I'd like to come back in January and talk to you about that and focus on perhaps March as a time we could do this with everybody's concurrence. That's a time where our supplies go really low. That's a time when we really, really need the help. So I will be back and will visit with you about that. That's an awful lot in a short period of time. Questions?
Council, you have any questions? Councilmember Hanford. Yes, thank you.
Aye.
Thank you for coming, Neil.
Sure.
So appreciate all that you've done.
Thank you.
Years ago, you helped my family out during a rough time. And so, try not to get emotional here, but you have helped many people out. And so I'm very thankful of what you guys have done.
Thank you.
I'm all for having him come in March to present. So I think that's a great idea, and appreciate all you do.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Neil, thank you, and thank your volunteers. Hello. I know how much time and energy they put into it, and it's such an important project, our service for our community. One question: when does the post office do their food drive? Because that's a big deal too.
It's the third week in May. It's on that Saturday, and
okay.
That has over the 5 years, the last 5 years, each year has been considerably less than the year before. I don't have the magic answer to that. All I know is that it's a diminishing return right now. Something else that we need to turn around.
Yeah, because it's a great idea to have the postal delivery people pick up the food. I mean, it's incredibly convenient for people to donate and to have the pickup. And that looked like the most food that was donated was the month of May.
And we get on the postal drive, we not only get what we gather in Monroe, but we get a portion of what's gathered in the county. That's part of the coalition sharing a big pot of food. So it is, and that carries us into the summer. But we've got to get from March until and basically till June. That's when we get all that food in the end of May or June.
Yeah.
We've got to get from one to the other, which is why I'm selecting March as a possibility of doing a citywide drive.
And then just a comment about the community garden. That is. I know that other communities envy that garden and actually come and look at it because it's a great community project that, provides a lot of food for our community and takes a lot of collaboration within the community with the city, the Boys and Girls Club. I know the garden club, and so kudos on that.
We have a garden manager named Mary Lee Schneider, and she's been there 3 years now, and she's just done an incredible job. And while I've got to give one more kudo, my partner in crime in this is my assistant, Carla Stewart, and she is amazing, and she is as dedicated as anybody you would ever see in this endeavor. So we're a team, and our volunteers are terrific. I guess that's it. Any other questions?
Are there any other questions, Council? Neil, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I can tell that there's an interest in doing something with the city and the food bank. So what I've done is I've made a note here. Mike Farrell will contact you sometime in the early month of December so that you guys can do a little bit of visioning as to what, some higher level planning as to what it might look like. And then Liz will schedule you for coming in and giving a presentation of what that might look like in January so that we can implement something in March. Does that sound good?
Thank you all very, very much.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Okay, the next item we have on our agenda is a public hearing. This is AB 14-152. It is a second public hearing on the 2015 preliminary budget.
This is the second of two public hearings on the budget. It's just an opportunity for the public to say anything they would like about the preliminary budget. The preliminary budget is on the city's webpage. I think it's on the finance webpage. The city's website, and so it's just an opportunity for the citizens to give any input to council that they wish regarding the upcoming budget.
Okay. Are there any members of the public? Oh, I'm sorry. We'll see if there's a sign-in sheet. Thank you, Liz. Okay. There is nobody who has signed in to talk about the preliminary budget for 2015. Are there any members of the public that would like to come forward and talk about the preliminary budget for 2015? Anybody else? Okay. Seeing none. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, Mayor. I would move to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. There's one more requested action. Councilmember Davis?
Yes, I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Davis and a second from Councilmember Camp to close the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. The next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. Please note that it is important that every person for and against a particular issue feel free to be here and to speak. I respectfully request that you help me maintain the decorum of these chambers, and please address your comments to the full council, and please direct your comments to the issue or of the issue or policy of concern. We ask that the audience refrain from clapping and commenting from the floor, and lastly, we ask that you please maintain the decorum as you leave. And then I have a post-it that says, please remind the public to speak directly into the podium microphone. So please remember to do that. Are you going to do this first? Okay. Do we have a sign-up sheet? Okay. And comments are limited to 5 minutes, so this is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe. Accept any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing, and please limit your testimony to 5 minutes per speaker. The first person that we have who has signed up to speak is Mr. Lowell Anderson. Mr. Anderson, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Lowell Anderson, 129 East Rivermont Drive, Monroe, Washington, 98272. Good evening. It's been a tumultuous 4 years or longer. We've written enough letters, filed enough petitions to the City Council to wallpaper this room without any written or oral response from council members pursuing this contentious rezone. As an example of our efforts, after our first victory over the city prepared FEIS, Mr. Rogers called the city to offer an olive branch. The city's response, we have no sentiment to speak with you. Mr. Rogers was surprised and shocked. Then it became necessary to protect our interests, so we wrote a letter requesting the city to rescind the July 10, 2012 ordinance amending the land use designation in the East Monroe area. The last sentence of this letter states, we also believe it would be beneficial for both the community and the City Council to create a more open dialogue about its future processes and plans for the East Monroe area. This request to come together has been ignored along with all other requests. During the October 14, 2012 Council meeting, Council Member Hanford stated, it's a sad day when some citizens say that we, the Council, don't listen and have some kind of hidden agenda, etc. We have asked Council repeatedly to explain why this rezone benefits the city, other than having 43 acres of wetland in the floodplain adjacent to the Highway of Death, zoned general commercial, and why they place such little importance over the safety of our homes on the ridge. Additionally, Council is effectively devaluing approximately 40 homes on the ridge to enhance one property owner. Why? We have given Council many reasons why this property may not be realistically developed commercially in the foreseeable future, perhaps even 30 years. The 7 questions given to Council members by me during the November 4, 2014 Council meeting, like all others, remain unanswered. Yes, Mr. Hanford, another sad day. I wanted to use an analogy of a high-stake poker game to describe my perspective of the situation for the next phase of the rezone. There are 3 players at the table: Church and Pace, the city, and East Monroe. The Church and Pace move all in with their property by paying for another SEIS. The city is next. They have lost the last 2 rezone attempts and approximately $427,000 in the hole, with a 2015 budget, preliminary budget, that has only $51,535 in the undesignated fund and only $416,917 in the contingency fund, which should have $800,000. how will they pay for the next rezone attempt? The city can fold and end this rezone, or they can call by agreeing to pay for more staff time and legal expense. Angry taxpayers are watching. They are concerned that roads go unfixed, sales tax had to be increased, and police departments had to provide their own court to generate more funds. East Monroe is next. They already have skin in the game and are backed by the Growth Management Hearing Board. East Monroe will automatically fall if the city moves to go forward. However, our decision is whether or not to raise the ante, which increases the expense. Pace Engineering Incorporated has a deed of trust of May 31st, 2013 for $170,000 on a search of property with no record of it being paid off in public record search. This precludes Pace Engineering making an objective study and raises serious questions on the previous study. They have a conflict of interest. We are opposed to Pace Engineering conducting an SEIS study. And last, to be perfectly clear, we will contest any commercial or other development that places our homes in harm's way and or reduces property values. But part of no, don't you understand? Thank you. I have two handouts, one for you, Kevin, asking us to come together. And this is the deed of trust that I will submit to the Ms. Lewis.
Thank you. The next person that we have who has signed up to speak is Mr. Douglas Hamer. Mr. Hamer, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Douglas Hamer, 21122 Calhoun Road. In August of 2013, Susan Boyd of Pace described the Oxbow Slough to the Planning Commission and as, I quote, a stream that provides flood management. It floods when the river floods. Later, after their FEIS had asserted that the property had never been underwater, she testified before the hearings examiner in response to the historical record that indeed it had, and I quote, we have no idea why the site flooded. And she went on to implicate beavers as the possible cause. At the recent November 4th council meeting, Ms. Boyd declared, and I quote, I want to be really clear, this property is not in the floodplain. It's not in the floodplain. According to FEMA and according to code, it is excluded from floodplain. Here is the FEMA flood insurance rate map, which Pace themselves provided in the FEIS for East Monroe, and it very clearly shows all but the northeast corner of this property designated AE, Special Flood Hazard Area. That is 100-year floodplain. This is the best available science on the subject, and considering it as such has been upheld both by the hearings examiner and the Growth Management Board. I don't think you want to spend any more taxpayer money on the notion that this property is not in the floodplain. Also, at the November 4th council meeting, Ms. Boyd tried to dispel any concerns about Pace's bogus blackberry-infused calculations for the compensatory flood storage that is required in the floodplain by assuring you all that they could easily find that storage elsewhere. They could put it underground. Pace is so familiar with this property, they don't know that it's an old riverbed, and the underground is already being used as flood storage capacity. She also suggested a developer could get the storage on some other property nearby. Local farmers have testified on numerous occasions their steadfast opposition to this rezone. Are you going to rezone this property on the hope that those farmers are going to sacrifice their own acreage to make commercial development possible? To obfuscate the potential noise impact on the bordering residential neighborhood, Pace claimed an air conditioning unit, the size suitable for a 2,000 to 3,000 foot home with 8-foot ceilings, was common for a home improvement store. Here again, reality was inconvenient to the narrative desired by the property owners, which brings me to the issue of Pace having a lien on this property that they seem to think is worthless without a rezone. That counts them among the owners of the property. I would like to know if the city was made aware of that at the time, because when I'm trying to gather accurate information about something, I like to know that the extent of the potential bias on the part of the providers of that information, especially when it involves me investing my money in it. It should be clear by now which side of this debate has a well-documented record of being disingenuous, and tonight you are considering letting them have another go at it. Our appeals are not the cause of the great expense incurred by the city pursuing this proposal. The cause of that expense has been all the inaccuracies and misrepresentations sold to you by the proponents of this rezone. Those misrepresentations are why our appeals have been successful. and the responsibility for having accepted them rests with this body. That acceptance came despite complete lack of evidence that a rezone would benefit the city in any way. In fact, common sense and experience from other communities across the country would suggest the opposite. Consider this from the University of Colorado Law Review on the legacies of poor planning decisions. Big box stores, the defining retail shopping location for a majority of American suburbs, are being abandoned at alarming rates. These empty stores impose numerous negative externalities on communities in which they are located, including blight, reduced property values, loss of tax revenue, environmental problems, and a decrease in social capital. Retailers are deserting big boxes in such large numbers that commentators have anointed the empty behemoths with their own name, ghost boxes. Is changing the color of the map so important? Does one property owner's right to a rezone trump the interests of the entire community? Where is the evidence upon which you are basing your decisions to ignore the obvious? Where is the example of a struggling retail district that has benefited from a new retail area a mile away? Where is an example of any commercial development in an old Oxbow floodplain connected to a river? The board did dismiss most of our claims because they do not have the legal authority to override a city's decision based on whether or not the city wants to make what the city wants to do makes any sense. But they did invalidate the rezone because of the inadequacy of the environmental impact statement, which was prepared by Pace and all their unimpeachable experts. Where is the evidence that Pace will not continue to obfuscate and misinform as they have done thus far? And how does all this purposefully misleading information add up to you owe us because we have acted in good faith? I would just say, let's not go another round with this. It's a waste of your time, our time, the staff time, and everybody's money, including the churches. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next person who is signed up to speak is Thomas Minnick, Pastor Minnick. Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
I'm Pastor Thomas Minnick for Heritage Baptist Fellowship, 13789 194th Drive Southeast. When I saw the cost estimates that you've been provided for projected staff costs, I said to myself, here we go again. A few weeks ago, staff was tasked to provide estimates for the professional services that were necessary to satisfy the growth board's questions. They presented you with a cost of $135,000 to $195,000, and those numbers were obtained by asking Pertit Engineering to provide an estimate. Of course, Pertit would have to start basically all over from square one for most of the work, redoing work already done by Pace, and to a great extent, work upon which the board has already ruled in the city's favor. It would be counterproductive and frankly wasteful to go down that path. The big mystery was the staff had also asked Pace to provide an estimate for that work. Pace, who knows this property better than anybody on the planet, responded with an estimate of $42,000, half of which our church offered to pay, leaving the city with a net cost of $21,000. While the staff had this estimate in hand, they did not provide it to the council. When asked why it was not given to the council, Mr. Brazel responded that the city was legally required to go through a bid process on this kind of project. Of course, that did not answer the question. In fact, that's an irrelevant piece of information. The city did not put the work out for bid. They did ask two engineering firms to provide an estimate, but they only provided council with the highest one, an estimate that was 6 to 10 times higher than Pace's. I think the question remains, why did they want you to see only the highest numbers? Now they've been asked to provide an estimate of anticipated staff costs for completing this process. And once again, they brought you grossly exaggerated numbers. Let me provide you with a few obvious examples of inflation. Staff projects taking as much time to review this document as Pace projects to produce it. Now that's just impossible. Staff projects 320 hours, that's 8 full weeks, for review and for response to comments. Now, there are several problems with that. First, we have an expert land use attorney on board who will review the document before it's even given to staff, assuring a compliant document. These attorneys have far more experience dealing with the board than anyone on staff. There's simply no way it will take staff 160 hours to review something the experts have already reviewed. Secondly, the response to comments estimate calls for more time than it took to respond to comments on the original EIS, a much longer, far more complex document. Again, that's just impossible. Finally, PACE's scope of work includes doing the response to comments. Staff won't even be doing this work. I'm sure they'll review PACE's work, but that's much different than doing it themselves. In light of that, I have to wonder, is there another agenda at play here? And so I urge the council to take these numbers with the proverbial grain of salt and pass a motion tonight to instruct the staff to move forward with responding to the board, satisfying their concerns, and let's get this done. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have who has signed up to speak is Steve Jensen. Mr. Jensen, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record?
My name is Steve Jensen, 17041 155th Street Southeast here in Monroe. I need to acknowledge that I am a member of the City Planning Commission. I am here on my own private citizen, not as a representative of the Planning Commission. I'm sure by now you've seen, if you haven't seen the numbers that the city has calculated for their side of things, and I believe the city has to do some of the work themselves due to legal reasons. They can't depend on external agencies that they didn't hire to do the work, so I would trust a lot of the numbers. I see that they have to range from as low as $75,000 to as high as $112,000. And the difference there is that if they try to do it all in-house, or you call it that, by the city staff, then it's $75,000. The problem with that is how much time it takes. They even acknowledge that there's other work to do involving the comp plan to come up, some other rezones, holds of land and such, Bear Mountain subdivision. There is work they have to do. So they have recommended hiring an additional staff or consultant to do some of that work. That's what raises it from $75,000 to $112,000. The consultant actually raises it by about $52,000, but the city staff still has work to do. So it only saves about half of the city staff number from 35,000 drops only to 19,000. The lawyer fees fixed at 40,000 no matter what. And believe me, when a lawyer gives you an estimate of 40,000, you can bet you're going to get a bill for 40,000 at least. You might wonder, well, how does this compare to the original numbers? Well, the original numbers didn't include the city work itself. They were all about these external agencies and such doing these studies. So with the studies covered now by PACE, these new numbers are, we really didn't see these numbers. They would have originally been part of the big 135,000 to 190,000 that you had a month ago. So you still are left with up to 112,000 at the, very likely that would be the best choice, would be to hire the consultant. The other factor is the time. I know some people might think, oh, move this forward and we're done. Actually, that's the opposite. If you end this tonight, you're done. If you keep moving forward, you're going to be back here, or the Planning Commission will be back here, doing more public hearings, which we know aren't going to be as quick as the budget public hearings. And that's not written down in the estimates of dollars, because it's not paid. It's still your time, and our time, and other time is involved. Another thought is, you're after a chunk of red on the map, but again, I mentioned this before, it's an inadequate red, and it paints a poor picture of the city to show the prospective investors and builders a map that has a portion that is just going to turn them off when they see it, and they'll question what all of our other maps have done. And that concerns me, that it's not responsible of the city to put an inadequate red zone on the map. And again, there's no, I've not heard anybody explain how it benefits the city other than extra space on the map. There are other areas in the city that could gain from red zone changes. And for one, maybe we should talk to the owner of the airport. That could turn into a beautiful red zone. Maybe farther west side of town. There's a lot of areas we can add red zone that's not nearly as problematic. I wanted to just conclude again. I brought up a visual aid last time I was here. I mentioned how the city has to do this comprehensive plan. It's this big as the old one. I don't doubt the new one's going to be much less. But I was inaccurate when I presented this. We're also doing a transportation plan and a parks plan. I'm sure there's something else that I haven't found to add to this pile. You and the commissions and councils, everybody's going to have to look at every single page of the new documents and understand them. And we have 7.5 months left. Do we have time, even if you hire an additional consultant, do we really have time to keep pushing this down the road further? I request that you adopt the resolution as it's currently phrased in your agenda, and let's put this to rest. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have to speak is Mr. Stephen Weeks. Mr. Weeks, will you come forward and state your name and name and address for the record? Thank you.
Yes, my name is Stephen Weeks. I live at 13806 310th Avenue Southeast in Sultan. Council members and Mr. Mayor. For the last 10 years, I've been a member of Heritage Baptist Fellowship and have participated in many of its activities in town. I am standing up here to urge you to adopt a resolution to respond to the hearing board's request. For the last 4 years, Heritage Baptist has followed through with every single piece of paper, every fee, every single thing that we have been required to do by the city and by every other place. Regardless of what the neighbors say, regardless of their requirements, all the engineering has been done. Everything has been done to the best of everyone's ability and professional capacity. And still, we're here again talking about this. At this point, it's the city's responsibility to provide us with due process that every other person who comes to the city has an opportunity to do. So, at this time, I would urge you to vote yes, to respond, and to get this rezone taken care of and on the way so that the city of Monroe can expand in all directions, not just in one particular direction. So there are options for many developers. There are options for the city to expand. There's a bigger tax base that benefits the city in the long run. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have to speak is Duana Kolovskova.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for struggling through my name. My name is Duana Kolovskova. My business address is 11201 Southeast 8th Street in Bellevue, Washington. I have to check my card because we just moved. So I do actually know where I work. I am legal counsel for Heritage Baptist Church. I've been retained in such capacity because I've been practicing in the fields of growth management, SEPA, and land use for almost 20 years. In fact, when I started my career, I was one of the very first interns during law school when the Growth Management Board was convened, and I was the first author of their digest. I have since consistently appeared before that board, before many other administrative boards, in both my capacity previously as Snohomish County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney representing the County Council and the County's Hearing Examiner on growth management, SEPA, and land use issues, and for the last 15, a little bit less than 15 years in my capacity in private practice. Why does this matter? Why do you care about my experience? Because Heritage Baptist called me and said, we're looking for someone who can really provide some serious legal support to the rezone that was approved by this council after taking a lot of serious public input, doing some very serious environmental review, and taking some very, very brave steps to address both needs that the city has and property interests that Heritage Baptist is entitled to. We're looking for Land Use Council who's going to support the city, who's going to be able to show up in the growth before the Growth Management Hearings Board, who's going to be able to show up before any other tribunals, and take the laboring oar so that the city doesn't have to have $40,000 further worth of legal costs, so that the city doesn't have to have the lengthy amount of staff review that they're concerned about. So I've been asked to join Heritage Baptist, and I am joining Heritage Baptist, to represent them and provide that additional legal support. We are aware, as I indicated, that the city has undertaken a lot of serious work related to this piece of property. Contrary to some other perspectives, in reading the board's decision, you know that I was not involved in this, so I'm a new eye on this matter. You largely won before the Growth Management Hearings Board. Your work was largely correct. Your staff did a good job, PACE did a good job, Heritage Baptist did a good job, and your attorney did a good job. There were specific issues that the board remanded on, and yes, that happens. I've seen it happen many times on all sides of the fence. But we urge you now to complete the work that you've already spent so much time and effort on. Why waste all that time and effort and just throw it out the window tonight? Why not complete what you've already started and give this property a chance? You're approving a rezone. You're not approving a specific project. As my client well knows, once this rezone is approved, the property still has to undergo very detailed environmental review for any project-specific permit. And the public will be actively involved in that. We have no doubt, as is their right and as we would hope for. Give us the chance to do that. If we can't bring the city a permit that can be approved, we'll get denied. But give us the chance to do that. What you're hearing from folks opposing this rezone is to not even give us the chance. And to us, that's patently unfair. That's not the way that the Growth Management Act is supposed to work. We're supposed to have the opportunity to provide urban development in urban areas if the environment can accommodate it. And that's all we're asking for in this process. I would like to address the comment related to the deed of trust that was raised with respect to PACE interests. As I understand this deed of trust, I've not seen a copy of it, but I'm very familiar with this process because it's a standard practice for consultants to secure some sort of ability to get paid for their work. Frankly, attorneys are not allowed to do that, otherwise we would do it all the time. It is not a conflict of interest, it is not a direct ownership interest, and it could be, well, something that any other consultant would demand of Heritage if they came in as an independent consultant through a separate city process. So it doesn't result in a conflict of interest or compromise PACE's work in any fashion. The public has asked you for evidence. We want to provide you with the evidence. Let us complete the process. Let us complete the remaining environmental review. Give us a chance to prove our case to you and wrap this thing up once and for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I do not have anybody else who has signed up to speak. Are there any other members that would like to come forward and speak on any issue related to the city of Monroe?
Did they get the hand up? Okay, good. Yeah,
we got it. It went all the way around.
Hello. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Brian Coonan, 15383, 171st Ave, Southeast, Monroe, Washington. Ladies and gentlemen of the council, first, thank you for your time. I'm going to start off with a brief history lesson. Thomas Jefferson, when he came into office, his politics was such that he was a firm believer that if anything not written in the Constitution, he wasn't going to do. He was presented with his first reality check in governing, and that was to sign the Louisiana Purchase, which wasn't in the Constitution. It was one of his hardest decisions. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to be honest. I really have no interest, one way or the other, with East Monroe. However, I do want to see that a fair and judicial process happens. First, I will start off with, if this was any other group coming to you with this request, would you do the same thing that you're going to vote on tonight? If you can say honestly, yes, if this was Tom down the road and he asked us to go one more time with this, we would do it, then you have to do it. Heritage Baptist has the same right as anybody else in the community. If you wouldn't do it for them, then you shouldn't do it for the Heritage Baptist Church and this property. On the other side, I am deeply concerned that we're going to have an outside organization pay funding for this activity. Because as a private citizen, if I came to you and asked you to rezone my property and I couldn't afford it to go back, that would be unequal under the law and under this activity. If I couldn't pay for it, but Baptist Church could pay for it and they could go forward with it because they would pay for it, and you wouldn't go forward for me if I couldn't pay for it, that's not fair. And it has to be, again, what you do for one, you have to do for all in the city. So please, look at both questions, look into your heart, and make a firm decision on, would I do this for somebody else? And would I do this if the city did not receive the funding to go do it? Because if somebody else does not have the money to go pay for it, you'd have to annul for that one, or it would be unequal. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals that would like to come forward to speak? Yes, come on forward. And please state your name and address for the record.
Randy Blair, 328 South Lewis. The portions that the city staff will be responsible for will be time consuming. They will be impactful. They may impact the city staff being able to get the changes for the entire 2015 comp plan done in time. There are some really great dynamic changes proposed in that in that comp plan. If they're unable to implement those because of East Monroe, that would be detrimental to all the citizens of Monroe. East Monroe has had its chance. They failed to do the EIS correctly. Heritage Baptist has taken a gamble on this property, and real estate is a game of risk. Thomas Minnick is acting as if the city owes him this due to some good faith. Nothing is owed. The process has been completed. This is a discretionary land use action. There is no such thing as a right to a rezone. Just because the paperwork was filled out completely does not mean that the application needs to be approved. The reality is that this is going to cost the city money, and it's not going to end up being rezoned commercial. If the EIS is done incorrectly, the board will reject it. If it's done correctly, they're going to find that there's unmitigatable impacts that does not allow for commercial development on this land. The environment does not support this. The purpose of this process is to determine the true impacts of development. Pace redoing the EIS does not mean that will be approved. This will be a waste of our taxpayer money. Again, this entire process will be appealable, and I assure you that we will continue to appeal this. All of us would rather be here tonight and all these other nights that we spend here at these council meetings using our energy on positive ways to improve our wonderful city that we care about. Please put an end to the city's role in Heritage Baptist Church's real estate gamble. Let's move on to things that are in the best interest of all the citizens of Monroe, because there are great things that can be done once this is finally put to rest.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak? Okay, anybody else? Okay. Did you see a hand?
No.
So that is the end of our public comment period. We are now going to move on to our consent agenda. Council? Councilmember Hanford?
Motion to approve as listed.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. So the first item is I'd like to, with your permission, go ahead and move under unfinished business number one to follow number five. Is that okay with council? We're going to move number one down to number five.
Sure.
Okay. Sure. All right. And then what we'd like to do is request an executive session. So we're going to go into an executive session. Pursuant to RCW 42-30-110-1i, the City Council will now convene an executive session for the purpose of discussing potential litigation with legal counsel. The executive session is estimated to last approximately blank. 10 minutes? 15 minutes? Unless further extended, after which the council is expected to take action in open session. So we're going to move into executive session for 15 minutes. Thank you. Okay, we're back in. Okay, we're back in session. We are now moving on to AB 14-156. This is the second item under unfinished business. This is ordinance number 016-2014, adopting Monroe Municipal Code 2.80, administrative authority. Chief, are you presenting this one?
Yes.
Okay.
The purpose of this ordinance is to authorize the Chief of Police to develop and issue various administrative rules, regulations, policies, internal guidelines, and or formal interpretations to aid in the interpretation and application of various City of Monroe ordinances that are subject to enforcement by the police department. The determination of which category of administrative document is appropriate for a particular matter will be made on a case-specific basis by reference to the surrounding circumstances and the legal framework governing the ordinance at issue. Please accept this as the first reading of ordinance 016-2014, amending Title II MMC by the addition of a new chapter 2.80, administrative authority, thereto authorizing the Monroe Chief of Police to promulgate and issue administrative regulations, rules, policies, guidelines, and interpretations for the purpose of ensuring and enforcing specific city ordinances, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Councilmember Hanford.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutterback to accept this as final reading. Are there any questions or comments from Council?
Chief,
I'm sorry, as first reading. Thank you.
Thanks for reading the motion, Chief.
That's you're welcome. Okay, any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is AB 14-157. This is discussion East Monroe SEIS. And is this Brad?
Yeah. Following the issuance of the final decision order by the Grove County Hearings Board on August 26th of this year, the City Council discussed several times how to proceed with this issue. On September 23rd, the Council directed the staff to prepare a scope of work in an estimated cost of preparation of a supplemental emergency tax statement to address the Grove County Hearing Board's concerns. That was done, and the Council looked at that, and then after the 14th of October, they reviewed the detailed scope of work and cost estimate and decided not to continue to pursue that. Following that meeting, at the October 21st meeting, and correspondence received from the applicant, that they were willing to have the case engineers do a supplemental impact statement at no cost to the city. That was brought back to the City Council on that November 4th. And then they got us forward to this meeting for further discussion. The city staff has worked with PACE Engineering to come up with a mutually acceptable scope of work that city staff agrees that will cover all the points that the Growth Management Hearings Board had an issue with. We looked at the amount of time that would take when city staff after on the supplemental environmental impact statement was done by PACE Engineering and their sub-consultants. We've estimated it will take approximately 700 hours of staff time to complete that review and go through the process of approving the supplemental environmental impact statement, issuing the draft environmental impact statement, responding to comments, that are received, and then issuing final supplemental environmental impact statement. If you look at one of the attachments, attachment number 3 that's in your council packet, it has the amount of hours that are available to the planning division staff, and with that extra work, you can see that there's not enough time to do that. So we either have to hire consultants or send work out for other projects to have them do that, or to have the work done by a consultant. We figured it would be better to have this sent out to the consultant, and it's one project, and let's go to work as opposed to sending out some things to that, and just allow city staff to concentrate on the other development activities happening inside the city. And that would cost approximately, in our best estimate, about $52,000. Also, the city attorney has provided an estimate, a rough estimate, about $40,000 to get the response to the Grove Canyon Green Floor final decision in order to prove the compliance hearing. And then, depending on what happens after that, there could be more costs depending on what the deal comes up. And also, with the staff time, also depends on what happens with the supplemental environmental impact statement and how many comments are received from the public, you know, how detailed they are, what issues they bring up, and things like that, and how much response time that will be necessary on those. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. And thanks, Brad. I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say some of these numbers look a little high, so I'm looking for some explanation here. A couple of 160s. I do this exact same thing for work. We go over all the numbers, and when the things jump out, let's get an explanation on what that is. 160 hours is essentially an entire month. I'm trying to figure out why it would take an entire month for the city to review, and I think Pastor Minnick made mention of this during his comments. There's a land use attorney who will have reviewed already. Why would it take us an entire month to review something
that
an expert has already reviewed?
Because it's our document that we are issuing.
A month? A month?
We have to look at it in very much detail to go through it.
Is that... Would you consider that to be a normal time frame for something of this nature? I don't know that we have documents of perhaps this size all the time. Do we have anything to... I guess where's the 160 come from? Why a month? That just seems like such a large number to me. I'm thinking that doesn't sound very efficient. I mean, I'm like, oh, a month.
These are both done independently. Both the planning division actually came up with a time estimate, and independently I came up with my own time estimate, and we were very close on those numbers. Just from the potential scope and the sensitivity of the information included, we have to make sure that it's very accurate and has a very detailed review.
Okay.
So it's not just something, okay, came in, you know, stamped stuff.
Even though that review would have already been done by, so they said there's a land use attorney, and just looking through what's laid out here, so there would already be a land use attorney that had looked at it. Then we get it, and it still takes a month to do that.
We have to sign up on it.
And I don't mean to disrespectful. That sounds like a really high number. And in my job, we'd be like, see what you can do to cut that number down. That would be the next response, right? When you're budgeting for time. And then the other one is, I think if I did the math right here, I guess it's a total of 320 hours overall to review and respond to comments, which is 8 weeks. And that, to me, again, just that seems like a number that is just that is way too. How do you get 2 months to review and respond to comments? And just verification of if that's actually more than the original EIS. I mean, this is a supplement we're talking about, so I'm trying to figure out 8 weeks. I mean, that's 2 months to review and respond to comments. Can you tell me a little bit how you came up with that?
I have 210 hours, so I don't agree.
Maybe my math is wrong. Let's see. All right, where's the 210? Sorry, it's still 210. That's a month and a half.
Well, it's multiple people also. So you have one person doing the majority of the work for 160 hours, and then somebody would work there doing, well, spending a week on it, and somebody spending a little bit more than a day on it.
And we would anticipate, I mean, that number just seems really, really, really high. Especially, you know, given the work that's already been done on it and the familiarity with the issue already. Ultimately, I did hear another point that I thought was valid. Us reviewing the work isn't the same as doing the work, too. And so the one we had before, the $195,000 one, was essentially redoing the whole thing. And so as I'm looking at this, you know, I'm thinking there are more efficient ways. There have to be more efficient ways to be able to do this and cutting hours. We're not doing the work. We're reviewing the work. And so it seems like, and I appreciate that you have your formulas and the ways to come up with these numbers. I think we can do better than that. But that's my opinion on that. And I'll leave my comments at that for now. Thank you.
Council? Councilmember Cutterback?
I'll just make some comments on the staff time, and just to point out to the public, the staff who've been involved in this, most of them have been involved in this for the last few years. This is the same staff that, you know, worked on it up to the point that the Growth Management Board came down and had their ruling in August. And I remember council commenting on how great a job the staff did and how well they prepared. Staff have come forward with information that we've requested numerous times over the last month and a half. Now, I think it's important to question and look at the information, so fault with that, but this is the same staff that have worked on this project and that we've trusted and commented what a great job they've done. So I tend to err on the side of believing the information that the staff have provided for us tonight. So that's all I'll say at this time.
Councilmember Davis?
Yeah, that's a great point, Patsy. I think what you're telling us then is this staff is very knowledgeable about this EIS. They know it in and out. They've spent many hours in the past, and I'm having a real hard time grasping 160 hours to review the draft and then 160 hours to respond to comments. If they are so knowledgeable about it, they should be able to look at this and go through it pretty rapidly, I would think, especially if it's going to be prepared by professionals that have a lot of knowledge also. We're not talking about, you know, a first-time out group that's stumbling through something here. We should have a very professionally done, well thought out EIS here, and we have the staff, which has got the background with it too. They should be able to look at this and review it, I would think, in record time, not a whole month. That's 160. That's 4 weeks, 5 days, 8 hours a day that somebody's going to be reviewing this. I have a hard time seeing that happen for a whole month. And that's just to draft it, then another whole month just to respond to comments. And those are the two biggest numbers right there. You know, that's 320 hours. And that's half the total time that given us. I don't see where we're going to be doing that. It should be the other way around, given the facts that I just stated here, with the knowledge and the understanding of what we're working on here. So,
thank you. Council members, any other comments or questions? Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
I'm in agreement with what's been said already. My concern is for the agenda, we had asked for city staff and PACE to come together and give us accurate numbers. And in the agenda, it says city staff and PACE have developed a mutually acceptable scope of work. And what I'm reading into this and from what we've heard tonight is that city staff and PACE came together and agreed on who's responsible for what, but did not come to agreement on what kind of hours and what kind of costs would be involved. And that's one of my concerns. Because city staff is saying this huge amount of hours, and yet we've heard from PACE tonight saying, you know, they have their own legal representation, they have their professionals that are going to be working on this, and as it's already been stated, we're familiar with this. The city staff knows this thing in and out. So I can't believe something doesn't smell right. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Anybody else on council? Okay. Councilmember Gamble?
Lots of notes.
That's why we're here.
That's right. That's right. Well, I mean, there's a couple points I wanted to touch on because there's some good points made. And actually, Patsy spoke about one of the items that I would, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilman Davis. Was the piece about city staff. Apparently, you're bad or good depending on which point of view your data supports. I mean, that's been the consistent. I don't have any. I've come in the middle of this. I haven't been here for the whole thing. But that is something that I see that rides throughout this. So I'm going to try to take that and parcel it off to the side. Because you know, the 3 years that I have been here, I found every one of the city members to be extremely honorable and respectful in everything we've ever asked. You know, we trust them to do a lot more in projecting than this in our financial analysis on a yearly basis and projections that we do for running departments and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it could come off a little arrogant from us sitting up here not doing their job. To say, well, that just seems ludicrous when they do it every day, to your point. And I don't know about you, a lot of times, you know, if I write something myself, I know it inside and backwards because I did the research. I did it. There's somewhat of an argument to be made that if I didn't produce the document, I'm not the one that reviewed it, then I'm actually going to have to review it even more because ultimately they are the ones, it's our document. Mm-hmm. It's our document. But I'm gonna, like I said, I'm going to throw that to the side because I keep going down through each one of them because I believe in due process. And the little note that I have here is, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on what side you're on this matter, this is due process. Everything that we're doing on this matter is due process. The other one is, you know, why throw out all the work that has been done? That's, you know, a statement that's been said several times. None of this gets thrown out. No matter what action that we take on this matter, whether we upheld or do the ordinance that's proposed tonight, all that's part of the record. If the current property owner or anybody afterwards wants to pick that up and make a run at it again, it's there. Or if we want to do it right now, it's there. So there's no throwing out of anything. The other one is the needs that the city. That's what I keep coming back to. You guys that know me that have been on the council a lot, I'm a property rights guy. I'm a, you know, very, very much a business guy. And what additional benefits can we bring to the city? And changing the color of the map, there is no, in all the talk, it's down the road. I've even wrote down here, needs the city has addressed us. What is the need right now? We don't have it. We've been very fiscally conservative council. We're actually quite proud of that. We have put a reserve policy in place. We worked very hard in doing that. It is a good point that was brought up, and I can't remember who brought up. We're $400,000 below that reserve policy that we have in place that we all feel very passionately about. And if you take all the stuff to the side, the emotional, you know, pieces of it, We're forced with a decision, and actually why we're here, the sole reason why we're here, is because, you know, because we already passed this, but then it was, well, wait, they'll pay now. Let's take a look. Everybody agreed. Okay, well, let's take a look if they, you know, if we can pay. And there was an interesting point that was brought up. I had never looked at it this way until tonight, and I can't remember who the gentleman that said it said. You know, what when you make your decision, make sure that if you would do it for me, if I'm Tom down the street or Tom over here, you would do the same thing for me. I hadn't looked through those glasses until right then, and it was a very, you know, interesting, you know, point. If we have a citizen that came for a non-project rezone, and we went through the trouble that we did, and we were faced with the situation that we have before us, that we already made the decision that, you know what, we do not have the money, looking at the budget, in order to go forward with going back to the growth management board and all that kind of stuff. We don't have it. We voted 5-2 on that. Recollection serves correct. The only reason why we're back here is because we have an applicant that says we'll pay it, which is a unique situation. So to that comment earlier from the citizen that, no, we wouldn't have done it for Joe if Joe didn't have the money down the street. We already made that. Just an interesting point, and I thought very, very valid for the conversation. At the end of the day, there's costs associated with this. I don't, you know, whether you agree with the hours, you know, or not. We have a $40,000 projection from the attorney. I think that that's conservative. Personally, just looking back at the history on this, I got to throw my personal, what I personally believe on this, and say, hey, what makes the best sense from where we get, we're going in, we're budget right now for 2015. And even if we go for broke, we put all our chips in and say, hey, no, we believe this is right. We're going to go to the growth management board and fight it, which, by the way, the only way any of this works, as we all know, is if we can get an extension. We don't even know if that's guaranteed. We'd have to make a motion for that, you know, for that extension because of the time it's already passed. We already took that vote. I don't see the work and the effort, and we get done. Where's the payoff? If I'm a taxpayer, where's the payoff? If there was something attached to it, you know, I get it. I mean, if I was Pastor Minnick, I'd be doing the exact same thing he's doing right now. I don't blame him at all. If I'm the residents in that hill and those around, I don't blame them at all. It's called this is due process. But our job is to take a look. Where are we at? It's 2014. What the information, the situation that's in front of us, and make a decision. To me, the data speaks for itself. Throw out whether we're getting it from the people that we trust all the time. Throw out whether you think it supports your point or not. And I would ask you just to consume what we've been consuming all along and make a decision. That's all.
Okay, and I'd like to go ahead and say a couple words also. I saw this spreadsheet on Friday, and I too was taken aback by the 160 hours for the review draft and the 160 hours for the respond to comments. And Brad and I did talk about it for a period of time. So I want you all to understand that I saw that number too and was surprised by the number as well. I don't have access to their timesheets. They don't, not until August or September, they didn't do time tracking at the level of detail that I understand they're doing today. And so as you're looking at this, I've put together budgets also. You know, there are different ways to put together numbers, and at the end of the day, you're a policymaker. You look at these numbers just like I did on Friday, and at the end of the day, you're still going to make your decision. Brad was using the term out-of-pocket costs and in-pocket costs. And I said, let's use inclusive, and I said, use something different, so we have inclusive and non-staff. But the point there is you've got costs that are just your staff time. And I don't want to belittle it's just being staff time, but it's not out-of-pocket financial cost. You know what I mean? So as policymakers, as you're looking at this, understand that I had probably 15 minutes to a half hour to go over this with Brad. And I, too, was faced with the same number and trying to figure out how I would deal with that number if I were you. And I would be doing the exact same thing, which is asking staff how they came up with the number. And then at the end of the day, when it's time to make a decision, you make that policy choice. You know what the hard numbers are. Those are the out-of-pocket expenses. You know what the staff's estimates of time are. I guess it's plural. And just like with any other job, there are going to be times where you're going to go over the number, and there are going to be times where you're going to go under the number. You know, at the end of the day, understand that that is their best estimate based on what they were able to do over the last couple weeks since our last meeting. And as far as working with PACE, I know that staff was working with PACE. They didn't, I don't think they went over the numbers, but this right here is the internal staff time for the numbers, and it was posted on the website on Friday night. And did you go over the numbers, Paul? I saw your finger go up.
I just have a couple comments from your...
Okay. So what they did do was they went over the scope that staff put together back in September with PACE, as I understand it, to try to harmonize what staff was looking for as the SEPA responsible official and what PACE was looking for as the consultant for the property owner, to try to harmonize the scope so that the staff who takes ownership for the document has a meeting of the minds on the scope. They, to my knowledge, unless Paul's going to tell me otherwise, didn't review the amount of time that staff thought that they would spend reviewing the material. So that's how I've approached this. I want to make it very clear that staff put this material together, presented it to me on Friday afternoon when I was here, and then posted it online after I asked questions like, really, 160 hours? And I was just not in a position of knowledge like our staff to be able to drill down on that and second guess the number that's there. But like I said, having sat in your seats at the end of the day, you have a policy choice to make. And as Councilmember Gamble was saying, you can take that number, it's their best estimate. You know what the and they're still estimates. The legal fees are still estimates there. You just need to make a decision, and we will move on as staff whichever way council decides. So with that said, that's how things came to be with what you have here before you today. And with Tuesday off last week, believe it or not, there was a reduced amount of time for staff to go through all the material. And I know that it took a lot of staff time with Brad, with Gene, with Paul and other staff, just Melissa, going through this material to make certain that it was what they understood council was looking for 2 weeks ago. So that's that. Paul, you're going to say something?
Yes, these are estimates, projections of staff time. They are good faith estimates. These are not inflated numbers. What these numbers are based on, partially our experience with the final edits from last year, the amount of time it took to work through that entire process. It's a it requires quite a bit of time and draft and ink and the kind of responses to go back and forth with the consultant, since this is something that the city will accept as complete and final document, and we do take ownership of that document. That's an important part of it. There are a lot of fixed costs or fixed time as to the task through this process. This supplemental EIS is partly based on the work that's been done. No question that it's not the same level of work as the first EIS, but there's also new additional work, some of this special issues like the flooding and the landslide and so forth, that will require a whole new vetting process as we exchange this information and finally reach a final product. Lots of noticing, lots of meetings. It was our best estimate of, based on our experience, of what it would take. And the numbers may come in lower. Depends on the number of comments, the number of times that we exchanges back and forth to get that final draft and final supplemental EIS.
Okay. Brad, do you have anything? Brad?
One other comment is, if you think we can do it faster than that, the way to, you know, hedge your bet, so to speak, is to not hire a consultant to do the review and have staff do it. And then if we do spend that amount of time, we just send some other project out to the consultant. If we don't use that much time, then that time's available for the other projects.
Yeah, and where that comes from is that one thing that I was concerned about in talking with staff is processing other applications. And I think I've stated that before. I want to make certain that Tom was probably not, Brian used the term Tom, because Tom is, Pastor Minnick is right there, but Tom or Joe or Jane that might come in the door, we would still want to make certain that their subdivision, their rezone gets processed. So that's why staff had thought, you know, one option is to do a consultant that can help process applications. And then the question was, do you have the consultant process applications, or do you have the consultant review and respond to the EIS and have our staff in a supervising role to make certain that there is quality, you know, quality control of the material before we take ownership of the document? So that's what that option was that staff brought forward. Okay, are there any other questions? Gene, do you have anything?
I don't. I wish we'd have had a cost estimate for how much time we've put in just to agree to the scope of work, and I'm going to throw out 40 hours. I might be wrong, but between Brad and Paul and Melissa and myself and the mayor included, that's how 160 comes around quick.
Yeah.
Right? It's going back and forth working with the consultant.
I'm asking the question. Absolutely. Yeah. Very good.
Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. You know, shortly after the board issued their response and council came up here and we had started the discussions, I remember one of the comments came up of, you know, depending on which route you want to go to council, is we need to make sure that whatever, however we respond, is ironclad. And that's always stuck with me. All through this process, and so when, you know, here we are and we're looking at these numbers, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, is this going to provide the ironclad response if that's the route that's going to go? And you know, it's a tough call because we don't know, because someone else that we did not hire is doing the work, and we're reviewing it. And if we're trying to make this ironclad, I mean, we're having to give it a very thorough review. Someone brings me a file and my professional opinion says sign off on this so we can be done with it. I need to go through it very thoroughly because I'm having the final decision on it. You know, it's me on that. I see this as the same way. You know, this, we're trying to put it into this one way or another. Yeah, I think is what it's coming down to, and we need to make sure our ducks in a row, everything's nice and tight. And you know what, 160 hours, it may very well take that much time. I have no reason to doubt staff's estimate. Could be less, but if that's what they're saying it's going to take to make this an ironclad response, I believe it. 160 hours, fine. It wouldn't surprise me. Hopefully it's less, but you know, if that's numbers we're going to go with or that we have available to us, then it is. So it keeps coming back to cost on this with me as well. You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. When the estimates were $42,000 and that Heritage offered to pay half of it, you know, I really wasn't in favor of spending $20,000 of taxpayer money, knowing that there's still more staff time, there's still more attorney costs and so forth associated with it. Sweetening the pot, if you will, by paying for the full study, yeah, again, really doesn't change things in my mind, because the amount of staff time, the amount of costs that we'll likely incur, as stated in the packet here, it's just too much, and I can't see spending that much any more on this. So that's really all I have on that.
Council, any other questions? Oh, Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, concerning that, if that begs a question, then what is the purpose of city staff? Why do we hire these people to do this kind of work? So basically, what we're asking them to do is what they've been hired to do. We're not asking them to do anything special. We're just asking them to do what they're supposed to be doing. And whether it's 160 hours or 320 hours or what, that's their job. And if they weren't doing that, they would be doing something else along those lines. So is this a priority? I would say, yeah, after 3.5 years. I'd like to see this move on. I think Heritage Baptist would like to see this move on. I think everybody in this room would like to see this move on. If we can get it to the growth board and they say, no, you can't do this, then no, we can't do this. It's over. But if we get it to the growth board and they say, well, okay, you answered our questions and that's what we were looking for, so you can do this, then we did the right thing. We had the applicant apply to change his zoning, like everybody's got the right to do that owns property around here. It went through the whole process. It went through the planning board. The planning board planning board recommended to the council that the change be made. The council took action on it, and we changed the zone. It was done. It was a done deal at one time. It's not that it can't happen. It did happen. And now it's back here. The question's asked, would I have done this if it was another person? Absolutely, I would have. If this was Lowell Anderson applying for this, I would be fighting for his right to get this zoning change. I understand both sides, and I understand where they're coming from. But and the next question, would I have paid for it if that person couldn't pay for it? Yeah, I would. That's why I voted last time to do that. So I can, with good conscience, say I think that we should move forward with this. And if Heritage Baptist is going to pay for it, that's fine. Let them do that. But let's at least give them a chance, like their lawyer said. Give it a chance. If it doesn't go, it doesn't go.
Council, any other discussion on the topic? Okay. Is there a desire for anybody to make a motion?
I think we have that in our next. Yes,
go ahead.
Thanks. And thank you for recognizing me. Procedurally, I don't think there's anything that can be done this week. At least I wouldn't think so. There's an action that was taken on the 14th that would actually have to be rescinded. Were a different direction to be taken other than what's on number 4, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know what kind of a motion you're looking for. This is a
no.
This is
discussion. Yeah, we have.
So from that standpoint, I don't know that one was.
Depending upon council's desire and direction.
I think we might find that maybe perhaps.
It may be in the next one. Yeah.
Next one. Yeah.
I was just verifying because I was given material. Just a second. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next agenda item then. The next agenda item is AB 14158. This is resolution number 023-2014 regarding East Monroe Growth Management Hearings Board compliance. And who's the presenter? Is this Brad again?
Okay.
Okay.
Same answer to the last one. So the October 14th, 2014 council meeting, the city council made a motion and passed a motion to no longer pursue the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment rezone. And in order to effectuate that, the resolution in front of you would make it official that the position to go to the Growth Management Hearings Board to end this rezone and comprehensive plan amendment process. Do you have a request of action to approve the resolution?
And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
So I'm going to make a motion. We made a motion on the 14th, I believe, that was passed 5-2. That included notifying the Growth Management Board that we weren't going to move forward. So I know this is the last step as far as approving a resolution. I've been pretty clear in my reasons for voting for this and voting for my motion a few weeks ago. We have been, this has gone through the process. We have been looking at this for the last 5 years. It has had its day in court. We are at a crossroads. City staff have done their job. They have given estimates. What we do know for fact is that it will cost more money. It will cost more resources. It will cost more time. And I agree with Councilmember Gamble's theory of what is the benefit? What is the payoff? There's no development waiting to happen. It's not a good use of resources at our time, at this time. And I do believe in my 5 years up here, we have not been fighting this fight for any other landowner that I have seen. And when I came to council 2 years before I got on council, I did not see any of this. So I respectfully disagree with Councilmember Davis that we would be doing this for any other landowner, private landowner wanting a rezone. We've had rezones before us before. We have not been in this situation where we've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for a rezone that has no immediate development or effect. And I trust the city staff. This property is a complicated property. We knew that coming in. That's why I didn't vote for it before. I knew how much time it would take. I knew how it would pull resources of staff away from other projects. Heard from staff. There's subdivisions, residential development waiting to happen. Those are priorities. A private landowner's desire to rezone his property with no benefit to the city at this time except changing the color of a map, in my mind, is not a priority. So I will make the motion to approve resolution number 023/2014, formally expressing the City Council's intent to achieve compliance with the Growth Management Hearing Board's August 26, 2014 final decision and order in CPSGMHB case number 14-3006C by discontinuing further attempts to reclassify and rezone the East Monroe area from limited open space, LOS, to general commercial, GC, at this time. Authorizing and directing the mayor and the city attorney to take all necessary and appropriate measures to convey the city council's position to the growth board and obtain a finding of compliance. Entering legislative findings, reserving the city council's regulatory and legislative authority and establishing an effective date.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Cotterbeck. I have a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, Councilmember Gehring.
Can I put you on the spot? I haven't heard from you yet. It's important.
If you'd like.
I'd love to hear.
I'm trying to stay away from the emotional side, but I have done a lot of research on this. We've been talking about 5 years for this issue. Actually, this issue has been, in one form or another, been going on for nearly 20. We've had disagreements to the point of incidents. We have to have a police presence in order to discuss it at all. I would like to see closure on this one way or another. What I would like to see is to go forward and complete it, get an answer up or down, as Councilmember Davis mentioned, to see what the final result is. If the Growth Management Board says we're done, we're done. I want to just find a way to get to eliminate this, to end it, and resolve it. It hasn't been resolved. I've heard different numbers. I've heard different speculation. I've heard facts and theories and expectations. But I haven't heard a final decision, and that's what I would like to hear tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gearing, you still have the floor.
You handed it to Councilmember Kent. Yeah, I handed it to Councilmember Kent.
Okay. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I think we have heard a final decision, in my opinion, and that was what was the council directed the mayor and staff to do several weeks ago, October 14th, was to respond accordingly, past 5-2. To me, that should have been the end of it. It's unfortunate it's taken a month to have this resolution on hand. I understand why it's taken a month. Agree with it, not necessarily, but I understand. To me, that is the final decision. There is no reason to take more staff, more time, and put into this. It was voted 5-2, from what I understood, and obviously others understood, was due to cost. Costs have adjusted slightly, but as we saw in the previous agenda bill, they're still up there. They're still very high. They were estimates before. They're still estimates today. Really, nothing's changed except maybe a dollar amount slightly. It's still a lot of money. Still a lot of time. That's it. And this is the direction that was given on October 14th. That was, in my opinion, the end of it. But I fully support that motion that was passed 5-2 on October 14th. Stand by it, always have, and I support it again tonight. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. Just procedural. First of all, isn't, and I guess this question is probably for Zach. Or for Attorney Law, I should say. This is actually this is more of a nice to have. I mean, you don't actually have to pass a resolution, do we? For example, doing nothing essentially is the same thing as I'm going back all the way back to the original options that were presented to us on this. We have an action that was taken on the 14th. Regardless of whether or not this passes, that's still the action that was taken on the 14th, is it not, from a procedural standpoint? My understanding that this was like a formal way of doing what you'd already done, but it wasn't. Maybe that's an answer. Anyway.
If I understand your question, Councilmember Gearing, the issue is the mechanism that is appropriate for conveying the council's intent to the growth board. If the council decides to disavow any near-term to proceed with the reclassification of property. Under these circumstances, the growth board's rules don't contain definitive guidance. The cities in our circumstances are essentially left up to their own devices to come up with some vehicle for conveying that intent. The vote that you took previously could conceivably be viewed as sufficient if it was conveyed. I would argue, though, that the based on the language of the growth board's rules, that some more formal legislative action is contemplated, and for that reason, I've advised the council to, if that's your intent, to prepare a resolution, which is the document in front of you now, which sets forth the council's reasoning. It takes legislative action to enact it, and then it is sent, again, if this is your preference, to the growth board as your legislative action. But there is no explicit reference to a resolution in this context in the growth board rules, and there is also no explicit reference to a motion either. Previous growth board case law has held insufficient certain administrative actions in this context, and for that reason, again, a more formal legislative enactment like a resolution is recommended.
I appreciate that clarification. Thank you. I too would like to. I appreciate the numbers again, and I appreciate you bearing with my questions on the numbers. It's what I do at my real job too, always looking at numbers. And certainly appreciate the staff that we have here and the great work that they do. That being said, as the mayor said, a policy decision on whether or not, depending on your point of view, do you push something across the finish line? Because feels unfinished, or do you just let it hang, or do you just let it be done and consider this to be done? So it is difficult. I have been consistent in that I've always thought there is a benefit. It may not necessarily be immediate, but the more red we have, the better. And I appreciate the debate on that and whether or not that's a good thing or not. I also appreciate the other points that I've heard. Staff time is very important. We have a lot of other things. We have the comprehensive plan. We have a lot of other things that are going on. That is what our staff does. That's what they do. They do a really great job. From that standpoint, I appreciate the extra time that was presented. Were we to move forward, I would assume that the most expeditious and yet thorough and ironclad way to do it would be followed, regardless of whether or not it takes that amount of time or not. I'd like to see this done. If it gets to the growth management board and they say no, I agree that that we're done. And I just don't see a way that it ends otherwise. There's always a conflict otherwise, and I don't know that there will be an end that everyone is ever pleased with, and specifically not on this issue. So from that standpoint, it makes it even more difficult because there are folks who are unhappy or upset depending on where you are on this issue, and that's not lost. I understand and agree as well. I'd be doing what everyone has done on both sides of this issue if I was in those shoes too. I understand that. My position again has been the same, and I'd like to see us go back to the board. And if they say no, they're done. I understand that involves some money. I understand that involves staff time, and I understand that we also have experts and that we are familiar with it. And from that standpoint, I'd like to see us move forward. Again, that's not the action we have before us here tonight.
Are there any other comments? Okay, Councilmember Gamble, and then Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Gamble.
Thanks, Jim, for giving us your input there. Appreciate it. I guess the one thing is it does end tonight if we vote on it.
That's very true.
That's one thing we've kind of lost there. And I guess the piece that we talk about making a policy decision, we've made several decisions as this council based on data that shows we shouldn't do it, but we may have an emotional attachment that we think we should do it. And that's a big line that we have to look at, because we are tasked with being the stewards of the resources, financial resources of the city. And whether I personally agree or think we should go for it, we still need to be stewards of the financial resources that are there. And we have the opportunity to do that. Everything that I see in the packet and the data and the finances and what we've already heard from the Growth Management Board, we've talked about it for so long, I think we've also forgot that when we first got the response back, a lot of the response was, well, we don't even know what they want because they did such a good job. I don't understand. It's kind of a mitigating losses approach. If I get it, that we, I want to see it across the finish line. But if we're just doing it for that reason, because I just want to see it across the finish line, because I want somebody else to make the decision for me, that's, in my opinion, not right. If you got the data in front of you as a leader that says, don't do it, it doesn't make sense, that's what we're here for. That's all.
Councilmember Hanford. Oh, Councilmember Gamble. Anything else?
Nope. Good.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yeah, a couple things. First of all, this is good dialogue. It takes some time, but this is good, and I think this is something that you were after recently,
yes.
Right?
Right.
So I appreciate that. Second of all, I just want to make sure that staff understands I appreciate them. I appreciate all your work. By no means am I trying to belittle you and what you do. I have questions in my mind, and the questions cause an uneasiness and a sense of dissatisfaction, not necessarily with you, the staff, just with the situation. I was wondering if someone can tell me, Gene, you were mentioned when we talked about the bids, why we were given the largest bid only out of the bidding process that took place.
As I recall, the scope that PACE first put together didn't meet what we felt the growth board was asking for. It was inadequate, and as you can see, the first scope that was given to us is very different than the scope that we've recently agreed upon with PACE for that reason.
Well, wasn't, were you going to add something?
Yes, go ahead.
No, we did not go through a bidding process. You cannot bid engineering or architectural services. That's done by request for proposals.
I'm sorry, what
we did was ask one company what they thought, and they also lost the opportunity to do the work by doing this for us. We hired them to give us an estimate of what it would become us to hire somebody to do a supplemental environmental impact statement. So it would have gone out or request for proposals. Anybody could have submitted a proposal. The city would have selected the most qualified, which may end up being paid if it wished to submit a proposal. Then we would have negotiated a scope and a fee, and then that would have been presented to council.
Okay, thank you. My understanding is that this, what we were presented with PACE tonight, obviously this is a thorough understanding and scope of the work. Of course, it's different than the original estimate that we were given, or the city staff was given a month and a half ago. So that's not surprising to me. But can someone answer why the estimate for the response to comments section is more than what it took for the whole FEIS?
I don't know what data you're referring to.
He's talking about on the previous agenda bill.
Okay.
Is that correct? On the
correct.
Spreadsheet.
Yeah.
For the time in one of the timesheets.
160 and
160.
110
hours.
Yeah. Why it is so much larger than it was for the entire FEIS?
I don't know how much it was for the FEIS. Are you talking about something, the previous one that was completed?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. I don't have any numbers for that.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it was in a packet a while ago.
I think that was a statement from the floor, but correct me if I'm wrong, that we haven't been tracking the hours because we haven't just put it in a time system, right? We would be able to do that. So there's really no way to produce that, Kevin.
Okay.
And another thing is we don't have any idea how many comments are going to come in from the public that have to be addressed. And you have to go through each comment and address it. So there might not be that many, which would be less.
So.
Okay, thank you.
You have any other questions, Kevin? Okay. All right. Are there any other comments or questions from council? There's a motion on the floor. Okay. No more discussion from council. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 3-4, if I saw my eyes correct. I'm sorry. Motion fails 3-4, if I saw my four correctly. Okay.
Point of order.
Yes.
Mayor, I'm sorry for my record.
The four that voted against were Hanford, Camp, Davis, and Gehring.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yep. No, not a problem. Thank you. Okay. Is there... Okay. Just a second. All right. We're going to move on to the next item now. The next item on the agenda is... impact. Yes.
So just clarification, since that motion failed, but the previous motion was 5-2 on the 14th, that included in that motion to notify the Growth Management Board that we weren't moving forward, where are we at as a city or a council? Is that something we
still stands as of now.
So that motion still stands to notify the Growth Management Board, but not with a resolution.
Zach?
I would actually need to see the language of that motion. I was not at the October 14th meeting. My assumption, just based on my informal tea reading from this end of the dais, is that I would assume there would be a motion to rescind or some similar.
Okay. He's reviewing some text right now. Just a second. Are there any other questions before we move on to the next agenda item? Okay. We're going to move on to the next agenda item. This is the AB 14159. This is a discussion on impact fee waivers. And is this Paul or is this Brad?
Brad.
Hey, Brad, go ahead.
In June of this year, the City Council did an emergency interim ordinance to portions of the Monroe Municipal Code that provided for impact fee waivers for transportation, school, and park mitigation fees for sometimes low-income and sometimes low-income transitional housing. That was a result of a large low-income housing development that caused a lot of cost to the city for paying for the fees. That repeal sunsets on December 24th of this year, in which case it goes back to what the language was before June 24th, which was included in your packet, so you can see what it would go back to. This was discussed at the T4 committee and also at the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission held a public hearing regarding this on November 10th. At the Planning Commission hearing, the only person who spoke was from the Federal School District that said that they routinely waive their mitigation fees for both low-income and senior housing. The four alternatives that was developed are do nothing and just let the code revert back to the way it was beforehand. That still leaves the city with the possibility of having to pay some mitigation fees to replace those that are lost from the waivers. State law has been changed. That only provides that we only have to pay for 20% of the waivers. Now it is 80% allowed without having to be repaid. Another one is we could adopt the waivers formally on the 80% option that's allowed by RCW 8202-0603. Which does not require the repayment of those fees from the general fund. I'd also like to do what we did that is to make consistent requirements for when the waivers are applicable. Sometimes now it depends, sometimes it goes to the city council, sometimes it doesn't go to the city council, sometimes it's available for just low income, sometimes it's only available for transitional housing, and you know, make that so if the council's desire is to make consistent requirements, it would make a lot easier for staff and for developers to know what waivers they were getting. The third option is to allow for 100% waiver by whatever criteria is established with no cap. And the fourth one would be allow a 100% waiver with a cap that the city council would allow 80% waivers for everyone that qualifies depending on what criteria are established. And then set aside a certain amount of money in each year to pay for that extra 20%, and once that on a first come first served basis, and after that, the any additional applications would just get the 20% waiver. Do you have any questions? I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, Councilmember Gearing was first, and then Councilmember Cutaback.
Great, thank you, Mayor. And thanks, Brad. I see this is the recommendation of the Planning Commission as well, the requested action number one. Is that correct? The that's one that they reviewed and... I was just curious how that vote went.
They went to option four.
I misread it then.
Yeah.
Oops.
Which is the 80% impact waiver without reimbursement impact fees and providing for the additional 20% fee waiver on a first-come, first-served basis in the amount budgeted each year.
Okay, that is requested action item number one. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was...
The only difference that I kind of thought about this more from after the council is that after the Planning Commission meeting, was talking about low-income transitional housing. So it had to be transitional, which means you don't live there for 24 months and before you have to move on.
Okay.
And just based on rereading the RCW, where it talks about providing for waivers for low income housing, is to expand it to just allow all low income housing. But that's up to the council if you want to change it to be more restrictive than we can.
Okay. And I understand doing this for the low income housing. I'm just trying to remember the background. So we're doing this essentially so things don't revert, because there's actually rather than having things revert, let's change it, because if it reverts, that actually puts us in a little bit more of a bind, is what I thought I was reading here.
More out of pocket expense.
Exactly. Okay. Right. So even though because I was reading this we're losing fees, but it's actually a better, the recommendation we have before is actually a better thing than letting it revert.
And it's also up to the gap. I mean, this is a fifth option and included is that you can get rid of the waivers altogether. And that's allowed too. Because there's nothing in state law that says you have to provide for waivers. This is you're allowed to provide for waivers.
And then let me ask about that. We already have discounts that we give to developers around, that we've already talked about. This is specifically for low-income housing, right? So, if you were talking about getting rid of the waivers, we already have a school district, for all the different mitigation fees, right?
Yeah, so this is only talking about the low-income housing waivers. That the establishment of the rates where you give the discount of,
okay,
I forget which one is, 25 or 50% off the impact fee, that's a different animal.
Oh, I was getting them confused then. Never mind. All right, thanks. Okay, very good.
Do you have something, Zach?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. No.
Councilmember Cutaback.
Thank you. Brad, in our previous ordinance, was it 100% waiver? What was...
It was actually very confusing because it was done at a different time, so they're all inconsistent. One of them says in conformance with state law, which state law now has been changed, which we don't have to pay back. We only have to pay back 20%. Another section says this money shall be paid back by the general fund, which would then require us to pay it all. So
right.
It varied depending on which fee you were talking about.
So last year, what was the total amount we paid in this?
I don't remember after we went through all the exemptions and everything. I forget how much it ended up being. And the school
this is for rate. Yeah, this was for Housing Hope.
Housing I think Hope, it,
yeah.
Diane would know the numbers. Did it go up to 400 and then it settled at 120 after all the reimbursements?
Okay. So this one with the 80% waiver, and we don't, I just want to make sure I understand, and we don't have to pay it back to the general fund.
The general fund doesn't have to pay the...
Cool.
Back to the
capital fund.
Yes.
The capital fund loses the money, but the general fund doesn't have to pay it.
Okay. And that's, because that's not what our current...
It does for a couple of them, because one of them says...
But not all of them.
The state law says...
Okay. So I just wanted to make sure I understood that. And did we budget for 2015 an estimation of a 20% if we went with this number four?
No, there would be zero payment of the 20% in 2015.
Okay, so we would then look at that we would have nothing for 2015 and we'd budget for 2016?
If there was money available, yes.
Okay. And where does that money come from? Just out of the general fund, we have to budget for it. Okay. I guess I would be in favor of doing four and doing it, if you did it, the general of the low-income housing period, not just transitional.
Council? Councilmember Cutterback?
I will make a motion. Provide for 80% impact fee waiver without reimbursing the impact funds and provide for the additional 20% fee waiver on a first-come, first-served basis and the amount budgeted each year. Impact fee waivers could be applied for all low-income developments.
Okay, so I have a motion.
I'll second it. I don't know if we need a motion, but yeah.
Well, it's a way to get consensus.
Very good. Yeah, so okay. I'll
second it. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was a motion.
Since only two of you spoke, it would be a good way to get consensus.
Okay. There we go. So I second it.
Your head's nodding. Okay, I'll take that as a yes.
Okay, so I've got a first from Councilmember Cutterback, a second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? You have direction.
Remember, silence is consent.
That's why I didn't say anything.
All right. All right, let's move on to the next item. The next item on the agenda is back to the interlocal.
Oh, number five, yes, which is now number one.
Okay, so we're going to move on to AB 14-155. This should read online, authorize the mayor pro tem to sign a interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for jail services, and I'm going to ask that the city clerk note my recusal in the official minutes for the meeting for this item. The reason for my recusal is that I am employed by the contracting party, Snohomish County. My position with the county is that of an employee, and my compensation consists entirely of a fixed salary. There is no contingent component of my compensation package pursuant to RCW 4223040, and based upon my consultation with our city attorney, I accordingly have at most a remote interest in the agreement and am removing myself from participation in this matter and giving the gavel to our mayor pro tem.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay, agenda bill number 14-155, presenters Tim Quinzer, chief.
This is a interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for jail services to provide inmate housing for adult prisoners arrested by the City of Monroe Police Department, to be returned and agreeable to each party.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah. I'll make a motion to authorize the mayor pro tem to sign the proposed interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for jail services and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Thank you. I've got a first from Councilmember Rasmussen and a second with Councilmember Davis. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say aye. It passes 7-0. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Okay, we're going to move on now to new business. If I remember correctly, this is AB 14-160, setting a date for consideration of the Hoserland rezone. This is Paul. Thanks. Melissa.
Good evening, Council. Tonight, the item before you is to set a date for consideration of the Hoserland rezone. The opponent is requesting a rezone of 4 contiguous parcels. You can see it outlined in black on the map. Totally approximately 31.10 acres. And from the current zoning designation of UR 9600 to UR 6000, so essentially increasing the density on those properties for residential. The Planning Commission held a public hearing on this on November 10th. At the Planning Commission hearing, all of the questions by the Planning Commission were answered and there was no opposition on the item. So the Planning Commission unanimously recommended approval of this to the City Council. Which is why it's coming before you in terms of setting a date, because the Monroe Municipal Code requires that City Council set a date for consideration, and then we can bring it back to you on December 9th for consideration of the rezone for first reading. So at this time, I don't have anything else to add unless you have any questions.
Anybody have any questions? Councilmember Gearing.
I move to set the date of December 9th, 2014 for the first reading and closed record consideration of the Planning Commission recommendation on the Holzerland Rezone 14-REZN-0001.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Gearing, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. We're now going to move on to the next item under new business. That next item under new business is AB 14-147. This is discussion, elected and appointed official term limits, and this is postponed from the November 4th, 2014 council meeting.
Uh-huh.
And presenter on this, I think, is Gene.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead, Gene.
Thank you, Mayor. Council asked us to look into this several months ago, possibly, and staff did a bunch of research and put forward the agenda bill that you have before us. One of the recommendations that that staff would like to see, if it's council's pleasure, to look at the boards and commissions specifically and to add language in there that would allow a board member to stay on to finish a complete cycle, a four-year cycle, should, if it's a four-year, should they have served a partial prior to. And that language already exists in the elected official language, but it is not included for boards and commissions. So that would read an appointment to fill an unexpired portion of a term less than 1 year in length shall not constitute a year of service. That would be the language that we would propose. We did have a discussion on this at the Legislative Affairs Committee this evening, and if the chair would like to speak to it, that would be
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yeah, we talked about that, and we all agreed that option B there. We definitely wanted to see that take place. As far as are you looking for a motion right now, or you just want to? That's it.
If you know. Your choice. You can separate them. Go ahead and make a motion on B, since, if you like.
Sure. I'll move to request the mayor and staff to prepare an ordinance amending the Park Board and Planning Commission code to provide for appointments of less than 1 year and bring back to the full council for consideration.
Second.
Okay. We have a first from Councilmember Hanford and a second from Councilmember Gearing. Okay. Council, do you have anything else, Councilmember Hanford? And then we can come back to the report on the second
sure.
item.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I do have two lights, Councilmember Gearing and then Councilmember Gamble.
Thank you. And I know Councilmember Cutaback and I had requested this. I think this was a little bit more of an addition to, I think what we wanted to talk about was more of the electeds. But with regard to this, Administrator Brazel had brought this up, and it's the same thing that we had incorporated into for electeds as well, as if you've served. It shouldn't count against you to have served part of a previous term, because then, you know, it kind of, then you don't really get to serve two of the terms, or the amount of time that's set aside. It's a little bit different for Planning Commission and for Parks Board and things like that. The period of time is a little bit longer. So by adding that in, that I think it allows for specifically for a Park Board member who would otherwise, you know, kind of would love to be perhaps reappointed by the mayor, wouldn't be able to, but if we made this change, then they would, because it accommodates for a partial term. So
mm-hmm. An unexpired term.
And so if we're talking about that same kind of addition, I think that's very fair. That's why we put it in the electeds in the first place. And it should, we should, I would be certainly in favor of applying it to the appointeds. That's what we're talking about. So I seconded it, but I'm in support for that reason. So.
Okay. Anybody else with discussion? Councilmember Gamble tapped out.
No.
My
answer.
Councilmember Cutaback.
Seems to make complete sense to allow, you know, if you're filling a vacancy, then to have a full term. So I'm in support of that.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of B, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. We'll go ahead and prepare that ordinance. Okay, back to item A, and Councilmember Hanford, I'm going to hand you the floor.
Yeah, as far as the item A, could you, Councilmember Cutaback, could you expand on
sure.
Your thoughts?
So I requested that this be brought back, and I've been sitting on council for 5 years, and I think this came to us 2011.
Yeah.
And I asked for it to be brought back, and basically for a selfish reason. When I approved this ordinance when it came to us in 2012, I didn't believe in term limits. I approved it, even though when I looked at the data and saw that our community did need term limits, I approved it. One of the reasons was looking at the advisory vote. There was an advisory vote that passed where the community voted in favor of term limits. And I don't know if anyone up here has ever made decisions up here and then completely regretted your decision because you felt you didn't do the right thing and didn't stand up for what you saw in front of you, the data that was before you. But it's been one of those decisions that I thought, well, if I have my chance, I'm going to bring this back and have some discussion about it, because I really believe I did not do my job as an elected official when I voted for that ordinance. The data that was presented at the time showed that this community had no problem not re-electing incumbents, that, you know, we had numerous people run, we had incumbents lose. I can go through and name specific elections, but we didn't have, and that wasn't presented in here. We had a kind of a chart of how many years people served, and what it showed at the time was really a good balance of a couple people who had served a period of time, and then a lot of new members coming in and defeating incumbents. And in looking at that data, I still voted for the ordinance because of the advisory vote, and I regretted that, because the advisory vote is information that I believe we should use to help make our decision. But I believe we're elected to make decisions on behalf of the people. And we at times have more information at our fingertips, and we're able to look at that information and hopefully make a good judgment. And at the time, I did not do that. So I wanted to bring this back for a discussion to see where people felt, whether term limits were needed in this community, how this council felt about term limits. Because I think that if you're going to limit somebody's ability to run and you're going to limit somebody's ability to vote possibly for a person that they want to vote for, that there's got to be really compelling evidence that we need that. And from what the data that I saw, that we don't need term limits. We don't, again, have a problem, you know, not re-electing incumbents. So I at least wanted to have the discussion tonight. I wasn't prepared to make a motion or ask for any type of change. I wanted to start the discussion with the council members and see where council felt. And then just a question, because in looking at the data that was presented, it showed that Kent and Milton had ordinances and then repealed them. And some of the cities that I saw that had ordinances, like Spokane and Tacoma, are quite bigger than our city. We're a fairly small city that, in my mind, we want to encourage participation. We want to encourage people running, have not barriers to running. That's one of the reasons why the previous council, or this council, I think last year, we looked at increasing the compensation, was to encourage participation. So in my mind, unless there's a compelling reason not, you know, to have term limits, to limit people's ability to elect or to run, that, you know, we need to look at that compelling evidence, and I don't see it here. So I'd be curious to see what other council members think about term limits, or if you thought about them. And
Councilmember Gehring.
And what a surprise, right?
Yeah.
And Councilmember Kudrak and I had a chance to meet and talk about it. Great discussion, and absolutely can see where she's coming from. And we were on opposite sides of what we thought about term limits, but just a great discussion. I would counter with there's all kinds of data, is what I would say. We had Bob Wilcox serve for 20, Jim Honeycutt 18+, Jim Hager 16, the late Ken Berger 18+, Tony Balk recently served for 12. There is a culture, when you get into the political culture of Monroe, and one of the reasons why this passed so overwhelmingly in town, is people love to pull up the term the old boys club. And we did have a problem here. And while some of those people were voted out, and some just chose not to run again, when you get into political discussions here, people remember that. And that's part of the culture here is the old boys club. And when, you know, when there's something going on, you'll see that thrown out once in a while. Oh, you know, it's just another old boys club, that kind of a thing, because of what happened in the past. And that's one of the reasons I wrote down some numbers from that election. And not to disparage those of you who ran that year, in Jim's race, there were 3,159 people that weighed in. In Ed's race, there were 3,083. In Jason's race, there were 3,055. For proposition number two in 2011, which I happen to have right here, there were 3,431, which means there were actually 300 more people that didn't actually care who was running. This issue was that much more important to them, that they actually waited on this and didn't bother voting for council members. That they actually there were 3,431. That's 300 more votes that were cast than for actual council members who were running for election. 76.42%. That's 2,622 yeses, 809 noes. That cuts across political lines. It's something that people wanted because of what has happened in the past. There doesn't necessarily need to be a problem to enforce this. And one of the fair things about what we did was that you can actually come back after a while. It's not true term limits. Everything you saw here, Edgewood, Port Angeles, City of Spokane, once you're served, you're done. Here, you take a break, you throw your name in the hat again. It's actually much more fair. It keeps that, you don't necessarily lose that experience, which you would. And one of the compelling things was I'd rather have someone serve for 8 years, three people serve for eight than one for 24. And we disagreed on that, because I appreciate that as well. There's something to having people with lots and lots of experience. But as you get through that, politicians at all levels lose track of who they serve. That they kind of think that this is their seat, you know, that this is mine, and it's not. It's the public's seat. And we have term limits at every level. We have them for a reason. It's because, and I'm not specifically talking about people here, this is a great group of people, politicians are bad policing of themselves. And that's why you have a public, over 3 out of 4 people overwhelmingly said yes to this. And it's only been in place for one election cycle, so as far as is it effective or not, I don't know that we have enough data there yet. And the only person that's affected in the next election is actually me. So not a self-serving thing. Again, I absolutely love to have the discussion. I'd love to continue the discussion going. Those are my thoughts. A little bit of background on why we did it. Some of the numbers, overwhelming support. And I know some others were not in favor of that. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble.
So what I hear is you're open for more discussion. That was the last thing you said.
Yeah.
So that's great. I mean, I voted for it too. I mean, because of the advisory vote.
Yeah.
Or it was, but I guess the thing that I laughed because of that. Man, term limits. We have term limits because it's called an election.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of funny. And the only thing I would caution on the statistics that you're rattling off is that's the general rule of thumb. Most people will vote for an initiative as opposed to they don't know the individual, so they just will abstain. So you're dead on with the 70% or whatever, or 60-70% that it was. But I also truly feel that it's one of those ones that you could put it on the ballot at any day of the week, any time, and it's always going to come back like that, because that's a feel good. It's just a feel-good one. I mean, it was passed it. I mean, we had a term limit, you know, pledge at the national level, too. I mean, that's, we all think that those deadbeat politicians shouldn't be here more than we absolutely, you know, should. So, anyway, Patsy, if you want to see more data, I remember seeing the data, you know, before. And I guess I just keep going back to the piece of like we're talking about. Our problem has been recently, I can't speak to the old because I wasn't here for that, is trying to find people that will serve on park boards and will serve on planning commissions and that will serve in the seats that we're in right now. I think last time you ran unopposed, correct? So, and, you know, I mean, this obviously doesn't affect me for a long time, whether or not I'll even, wouldn't even get to that point. but for, you know, for someone like Patsy that's would be coming up, or even for yourself, you know, I have no problems with you running again and letting the people decide. I just, fundamentally, that just doesn't bother me in any way, shape, or form. You want to run again, go for it. Plus, the data tells me that we really don't, I mean, have a problem with that. I mean, you rattled off some names, but some of those names are 20 years old. That's not the culture that we have in Monroe anymore. It's just not. So, and the other thing that I thought that was interesting, and I want to hear a little bit more about it in the data that was provided, was that we can't enforce it by a court action. I'm just not about the whole attorney fee thing. So could you clarify that?
I'm afraid I don't understand the question.
It says it in the document that, you know, really it's not in the county, that the county, the elections
can't. We have to defend our own.
So I could put my name in, it'll go on the ballot. And the only way that they would be removed is by court action from the city. And that's correct?
I'll defer to the county's position on that, but that is my understanding. If it would be like any other ordinance, the city would have the obligation and the duty to defend it against a challenge and to enforce it in the event that it wanted to actually ensure that its provisions were adhered to. I would agree with that.
So I guess I would like to see a little more on, you know, what does that entail? We did have to do it, so if somebody, because there are, you know, somebody on here, like say if Tony Balkman's and he's going to decide, you know what, screw the ordinance, I'm running.
He might do that.
He might just do that, right? Is he out there with his Yankees hat? No, I don't see him. What would the process be? How much is that going to cost us? What does that entail? That's the first time I'd seen that.
Let Kurt test it.
There we go. So yes, let more information, please. Thank you.
Did you have something?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Is there any other discussion on the topic? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. So as I guess spirit of the conversation and asking for feedback and thoughts and so forth. For me personally, I mean, it seems like every board and commission I've ever been a part of, there's been some sort of term limit, and it's never really stopped anyone from running or requesting to be appointed or anything like that. So see the value, see the benefits on both sides of it. I actually remember sitting in those seats during the discussion when this was up before, and one of the comments or one of the reasons to have it was to encourage more participation in the elections and so forth. Granted, it was just one election cycle, that being the last one, the one I was part of, and wasn't a huge amount of participation. So if we're looking at that, kind of paints, I don't think, the picture that's being looked for. I guess it's not the answer that anyone's probably looking for, but when it comes to the term limits, really, you could take it or leave it. There's value on both sides of it, and you know, it's if someone wants to vote some way, they will.
So. Okay, I have Councilmember Hanford and Camp, then Davis. Councilmember Hanford.
I see both sides of it. I've heard both sides of it. I tend to lean towards the vote that was taken. Just upholding that, what the public said on the advisory vote. That's my thoughts right now. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I believe I was sitting next to Councilmember Rasmussen when they were having a discussion out in the audience. I was opposed to the term limits when it came out. However, seeing the very high turnout and vote for them, I believe it's something that the citizens of Monroe wanted, and I wanted to follow through on that. I know there's some discussion after my hiatus from my appointment
That's right,
to
yeah.
my election, where there was some discussion on modifying it. I'm since it was an advisory vote and it was so overwhelming, I'm hesitant to go against the citizens' wishes at this point. Perhaps in the future, this is just speculating, just an idea, if there is a desire or a need to have another advisory vote for a modification, I think that would be appropriate. Like I said, I understand your point about having the not having a term limit, and especially in at this level where getting people involved is a point. Well, that's basically it. Thank you.
Councilmember Davis and then Councilmember Cutaback. Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Councilmember Camp here. That's pretty much how I feel about it. I'm not been a strong supporter of term limits. I think maybe there are circumstances that that's a tool that can be used properly. The only issue I have with it is that advisory vote. It was a little bit overwhelming, and it spoke to me, I guess. I felt that the public making it that strong a statement that's where we needed to go, and that's why I voted for it. I was simply responding to the public's voice in that.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback?
Just to respond, I think if we were to take another advisory vote, I agree with Councilmember Gamble that it would pass. So I didn't think that was something that I would recommend. Because I think the buzzword, yeah. I mean, people when they just think, oh, term limits, that sounds like a great idea. And that's why when I voted for it, I was going with that. And I've regretted that because I was not doing my job. I looked at the information. I had it in front of me. This community doesn't need it. There's no compelling reason to have it. And that's what my job is as a council member, is to look at that and vote, because I have more information at my fingertips than the public does. When I talk to people after the vote, you know, and I would have voted for it. Term limits sounds great. But I had access to the data, and when I talked to a couple people after the vote, and they said, well, what do you think about the term limits? I said, well, here's why I'm not in favor of them, because most people think I am in favor of term limits.
No,
but I truly believe that the election is the term limit, and the people have the right to make that decision, and that our body up here shouldn't set that for them. And people, when I shared with them the data of how incumbents had been not reelected, and we wanted to spur people to run, and we wanted to give the people the choice that if they wanted someone to stay up there, then they should be able to vote them and keep them in there. And you know, people are like, oh, I didn't think of it that way, or I didn't know that we didn't have a problem with it. And so I think, you know, if we're able to provide education to the people and tell them and show them the data, I think the vote would be different. But that takes time and effort and all of that to go out and educate the people about term limits and the data that we have in front of them. So I think that if we were to take another advisory vote, it would pass because it's a positive buzzword of term limits. So I'm not necessarily in favor of wasting any more resources or looking for that. I wanted to get a sense from this council of whether term limits was something that this council felt was needed. I do not. And I wanted to make that vote that I took right and at least express my opinion before it gets too farther down. Again, it is the one vote that I regret up here. I don't regret the Walmart vote or the H2O vote or the East Monroe vote or anything like that, because I voted on the data and I used the information and I listened to people, but I made the decision based on the information I had in front of me. The term limit vote, I did not do that. So in order to be consistent, I appreciate council having the discussion and bringing it back and allowing me to get a sense of how the rest of council felt about it. So I appreciate that.
So I'm not hearing an interest in moving further on A.
Well, I have a specific ask on the...
Okay, yes.
The one. That's the first time I'd seen that bullet on...
Yes.
The rebuttal, you know...
We will get more information on that, yes. And so that's information on what happens in the event.
Yeah, we have to do it. Right, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't know that they couldn't enforce it.
Places his name on the ballot in May. Just kidding. When somebody puts their name on the ballot, what does that mean?
Can I speak to that just briefly to see if maybe I can get some clarification on
that? So, just a second. Councilmember Gehring?
I move to extend the meeting past 10 o'clock.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Camp. Okay. Any discussion on the motion to extend past 10? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion
aye. Aye.
2-5-2.
We're going to start putting hands up here. Okay, so 5-2 with Councilmembers Cutaback and Gamble voting in the nay. All right. Liz?
Sure. Just to give you a little background on this, I talked to Snohomish County Elections on this issue. I was actually talking to them about our bill for the last election and happened to bring this up and ask them if they enforce term limits at their level, and they said no. So I specifically asked them what they did enforce as far as when somebody attended a file, how did they verify that they met the requirements to file a candidacy, and the only one that they do enforce is residency, because that's the state law. So of course it applies at their level. So anything adopted at our municipal level would be on us to enforce. So of course I asked them, well, what are your thoughts on what would be the way to do so? And that was the two options that they brought forward. And of course, these are all just talking to their staff members there to say that if somebody filed as a candidate, they would appear on the ballot. And so the option would be to take some sort of formal action to remove them from the ballot, or to have the election, and if the person was elected, to choose to not confirm them because they did not meet the requirements of our city. Two options that they, from the county, let me in on. And
my point.
I thought that's very interesting and good to know.
Thank you.
So I think if you did want to have more information, it would be good to know kind of what exact information you'd like us to look into.
Maybe how enforced from other cities. Councilmember Gamble's, how would you actually enforce it? We have a list of other cities here. If they're in the same boat, or if they've done anything else in, additionally, perhaps, what else they might be doing up here, other than what you're allowed to do to defend any other ordinance you might have on the books.
Well, I guess the other thing is you play that out. Not that it's going to happen. It just seems kind of funny to me. We have an ordinance that's not recognized by the county.
It'll be interesting to see if it's like that with King County. Yes.
Find out,
All right.
Okay. So we'll get some more information about that, and we'll bring that back to council in the next couple of meetings. Anything else on that topic? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and move on then to council member reports. So P4 committee. Councilmember reports from the P4 committee. Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Chair of the burden.
Thank you. So P4 committee was last Monday on the 10th. Big topic of discussion was, of course, downtown parking, and Una from the chamber was present and talked to the committee. When we discussed the downtown parking at council, kind of the consensus was, how is this survey for the next few months going to be done, tracked, so forth like that, what's the plan? And really went back to her with that. And Councilmember Davis and Cutaback can chime in on here, but what I heard her say was it was going to be a lot of in-person touches, asking for the feedback. Asking for it now, asking for it a month later, and asking each and every month, and seeing if it changes. So that was kind of her plan. In the discussion, we felt that as far as the experiment time frames, parking limits go, it might be best to move them to, instead of saying unlimited time to park down there, to make it a 24-hour limit. In that respect, that someone can't leave their car parked in that one spot in front of the bakery for a week or, you know, several days. You know, they are limited to 24 hours. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, there would be 15-minute parking spots along down Main Street to, you know, help with that quick in-and-out type of clientele. You guys have anything more on that?
And this experiment would go to February 28th. Yeah, somewhere around the end of February, and then Una would come back with the data of when she's out talking to the business owners and getting their feedback on how it's proceeding. She would come back with that information of what the tally was and whether they were in favor of it or not. And this appeases some of the comments we heard about wanting a couple 15-minute and quick and in and out. My business is done on people coming in and coming out, and how does unlimited parking help with that? So it was strategic of the 15-minute spaces on kind of on the corner, two on each corner, and then some on Lewis Street, I believe, right around the corner on Lewis, and keeping those.
Can I ask a question?
Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, Mayor. One of the concerns that we've heard over the years with this is the guy who parks in front of the other person's business and just parks their car there all day, right, when the other, and that kind of a thing. Is there any, is that addressed, that, is there any thought on that? Is that, I mean, unlimited to me, when I think of that, doesn't really, and I know that's just one thing, but it is something that we've heard about, you know, how do we, is there a way to deal that? Is I'm at a loss as to, you know, how do you do that? You know, and you guys are spending a lot of time on this. You're thinking through it. So I'm like, you know, how do, can we accommodate, you know, can we do something about that? I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
And we talked a little bit about that, because not only do you have that issue, you have employees not parking in front of their employers,
exactly,
but,
they park
but next door.
Exactly. I think that's actually the issue.
And that's, and yeah, that's one of the issues. But then again, we're talking about only 50%.
Yeah, 50%
capacity
open.
Yeah,
and so you could
so we're
just
not really
like go here and right. Yeah.
So how much of an issue is it? Is right. It just somebody doesn't like that car?
Is it a pet peeve, or is it actually a problem? Yeah.
Right. And well, that's why we changed it from unlimited to 24 hours. So we were trying to get rid of that car has been parked for
somebody
7 days.
Somebody just stuffing it there and leaving.
Or that
it.
Truck is over there for 2 weeks.
Plus, you say unlimited, and you got people parking in front of fire hydrants and in handicapped parking places, et cetera.
I thought one of the other issues was also enforcement.
Yeah, and we talked about that. I mean, that's going to be a problem no matter what. So, you know, most people, when you put up a sign that says 15-minute and you know you're going to be there for 3 hours, aren't going to park in the 15-minute. I know some people will. But that was why we settled on having the 15-minute one. So we believe that most people would, since those spaces aren't full, only 55% capacity, that most people would, you know, go with that, not park in the 15-minute when they're going to shop for 2 hours. I mean, human nature is not to sit there and park for 2 minutes. You don't know that they're not enforcing it. I mean, most people aren't making, I mean, people that haven't been caught and have done it possibly, but most people don't go in the expectation of they're never enforcing this. I mean, I don't think that's common, as we say it on public record right now.
Well, we've said that, I mean, and that's why I'm bringing them up. It's been said many times, and, you know, the couple pieces that we've talked, whether it's the sign code or parking, is that we don't, I mean, we got to enforce what we have already before we go and change. Yeah. Try to change stuff.
And that's why this simplifies it somewhat, because when you have 2 hour, 4 hour, 15 minute, you know, that takes more enforcement than 24 hour and 15 minute. You know, you don't have all those different times and you have to come back more frequently. So, you know, we can't solve the enforcement issue. We don't we don't have a solution for that, to be honest.
But our goal with making the 24 hours and then having the 8-15 minute parking was, Councilmember Kovac said, for the enforcement piece, part of it for the enforcement piece, to make that as easy as possible. There's only two time zones, if you will, that they're needing to be enforced at that point. So.
Right now, there's a car can be parked for 10 days without it, and we just thought that was one of the issues, what people were saying, cars were parked for 10 days. There's signs that say 24-hour parking instead of, you know.
But it's just for that one spot, though, right?
For what one spot? The
spot to rent. I beat them. Pull out of that spot, I go over to the other one.
Yeah. But again, we're not full down there. I don't think we're having a lot of people shifting around. There's open spots. So
what are the next steps then on this? Is this something that a resolution that's going to be coming forward that reflects that recommendation?
Yes. Okay. December 2nd. Okay. So December 2nd, that would come forward for council to vote on, and it would be for the time frame of till the end of February to gather more information, see how the business owners respond to this. It would be 24-hour parking and 8-15-minute spots.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Anything else from the P4 committee?
We discussed impact waivers, which council discussed and voted tonight. We also discussed traffic calming tools and criteria. I learned, this has been discussed in previous council, that the city has to set a criteria and fund it and so forth. And so Brad provided us with lots of reading material that the committee is going to go through and bring back to the December people committee meeting and have up for discussion after that happens. The last time we discussed was just getting an update of the status of the H3O cable park. And it really sounds like that we as a city are just waiting on response for their permits.
Mm-hmm.
Been out there since April, and no response from H3O at this point. That's where it's at.
Okay. Any questions for the committee? Okay, let's move on to the Legislative Affairs Committee. Who'd like to report on the Legislative Affairs Committee? Is there anything to report?
Sure. So we already talked about the term limits, and then the other thing we talked about was the 2015 legislative priorities. The US 2 Monroe Bypass Project, connection of 191st to Galaxy / FR7, pedestrian crossing to Highway 2 and 522 on-ramp, toll trains, liquor tax revenues, and streamline the sales tax. So those are the items that we talked about. There's nothing to be brought forward right away, but that's an update for you.
Okay. So we have the AWC legislative conference in January. Are these legislative priorities that the committee will want to bring forward in December or early January so that we can fold those into the session in January?
Yeah, what do you think? Probably.
But I would think we would. And specifically, this is also the list that, and maybe you mentioned it while I was out, with that we had brought. We had Kirk Pearson, Senator Pearson was here, and we had expressed some of these to him, asking for his help, specifically the transportation related items, because he has some seniority there now, and will now continue to have seniority there through this late selection cycle from 2 weeks ago. So, if lobbying him and maybe all of our representatives, but whoever, I think, because the AWC thing is more of a global lobbying, like, isn't it? It's a little bit bigger lobby. It's not just lobbying. Do we just go lobby our legislators, or are
yes.
we lobbying more than people? Then never mind. Yeah, we want to absolutely incorporate these into the what we're asking for.
So
that was a roundabout way to say.
Okay, so.
Not once you get your state term limits.
So I'll work with staff about trying to have those finalized so that at your next committee meeting, you all can discuss them, we can bring them here, and we can formally either come to consensus or adopt them, whatever the appropriate mechanism is. so that as we go down to Olympia, that we can share those with our legislators. Sound good?
Great.
Thanks.
Is there anything else from the legislative committee?
Yeah. Can you, once we have those dates in January or February when you're going to go down, can you let us know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Love to attend if I can.
It's usually mid to late January, so okay. That gives you a rough.
That's it.
Yep. But we'll get you dates, so we'll have that on our to-do list also, is get you dates for the legislative conference with the AWC. All right, let's go ahead and go down the line with council member reports. Council member Gehring.
Nothing tonight, thank you.
Okay, council member Gamble.
Well, since we continue past 10, we got to hear a blow-by-blow for my kid's game.
There we go.
No, I'm kidding. No, there is one team left in the city of Monroe that's still playing football. Just thought I'd all let you guys know that. The Monroe Bearcat 89ers, 12 noon at the high school, playing for the championship.
Nice.
Any and all that want to support, it'll be good. There'll be quite a crowd out there. It was neat for the semifinal game last weekend. We had some of the high schoolers there, and the kids know that was pretty cool. So, anyway, that's it.
Councilmember Davis.
Nothing here.
Councilmember Kent.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Rasmussen. Councilmember Cutterback. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, I'm attending a breakfast on December 4th for Affordable Housing Breakfast Forum in Everett. If anybody's interested in the information, I have it here. You can see me. Also, I want to, not sure the process, but I want to give notice that I will be on December 2nd. I would like to have an item on there where we can vote to rescind their decision on October 14th. So I'm not sure the procedure of that, but...
AB 14-128. Is that your intent? The East Monroe options? That was the name of the agenda item. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about the one that we passed 5-2 originally.
AB 14-128.
Yeah. AB 14-128. So...
You're declaring your intent to do that on the 2nd?
That's what I'm doing. I'm declaring my intent.
What I was hearing from you. Did you like that? No, it's good.
Okay. I have lights, and then I have... Do you have anything? Okay. Councilmember Cutterback, I don't know who was first. Councilmember Cutterback?
Yeah, I will not be here on December 2nd. I will be out.
Okay.
Ooh, back on December 9th.
You'll be cruising.
No. Councilmember Gamble?
I forgot to add that I most likely will not be here the week of January 13th. Just for the extended agenda.
Okay, we're already into January. Thanks.
Well, you got it on there.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
We do have it on there, yes.
Well, I can give you my schedule for the business.
No, that's okay.
6 months if you want.
That's okay. All right. Anything else, Councilmember Hanford?
No, sorry.
Okay, that's it. All right, going out to staff. Ben.
Just an update on the water claim. There's two break that we had a while ago before we had this citizen questions. There were two houses impacted, the house in the corner, not the one that was in there. So that has been closed, they've signed everything, they've moved on. That's the main house that has questions about. All the bills have been paid, we're just waiting for the final, our insurance is waiting for the final settlement.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ben. Mike? Parks?
So in your packets, you've got the Julia Morris Garden Community Report for the year. And Neil Watkins at the beginning of the meeting touched on the great work that in partnership with City of Monroe, Food Bank, Senior Center, and Boys and Girls Club and Garden Club volunteers work together, and we have some tangible things that over 3,000 pounds of vegetables. So it's an awesome thing. So on a note here, look cool that they wanted to designate a few of these or note a few of their volunteers. They have the bean queen, so we brought them, a couple of people who kept the beans stick in the water. And they also have Sergeant Pepper. He's in charge of Pepper's dipping and pulling it. So it's a real nice report in the middle of it. Gives you a little bit of background on how the garden started in 1999. And then the last page, nice color, you know, here's a vegetable, here's a picture of the beans, and this is how many pounds. So you really can get an understanding of, you know, how much bean weighs or something. It's, you know, 800 pounds of beans is a lot of beans. And it shows that how productive that little patch of ground is. And anyways, I really enjoy working with all those groups. Second thing I want to tell you about is Paul and Gwen Sayers of Pine Creek Nursery have generously donated a Christmas tree for downtown for this season. And so they'll go up next week. And the light up in the road event, as a reminder, is not the Saturday after Thanksgiving, as it has been the tradition. This year it has been moved to the first Saturday of December, which is December 6th. So Mark,
okay. Thank you, Mike. Diane? Okay. Paul?
I'll give you a quick update on the 15 update. I sent out an email 2 hours ago about the exercises that were done last week at our joint meeting at the middle school. 15 lively discussion and conversations. And I have asked that each of you take these topics and go through these exercises. These are the key strategies, driving the triangles all the way from Lake 5 over to the hospital area, downtown, Pulse, the area, and so forth. Each one, I gave you an example of the violence triangle and working through these steps, these exercises, but very quickly, it involves rating these mild policies, which a lot of which are existing policy in our comp plan, and then rating these are the default more than maximum or farther out policies for the trials in this case, and then going to the lower part of the page and rating the resultant programs that are a lot of these policies. And at the very end, give this some kind of rating as to how aggressively we should be pursuing these policies or these programs for this item, for the violence, or for the vital Chelsea, vital downtown strategy. These have been worked through by the planning commissioners, the park board, and the systems advisory commission, and we'll be collecting a few more from those groups that we have a complete set. And I'd really like to have let me have you take the time to work through these as individuals so that we can compile a set of responses out of the exercise. I'd like to get them back by Monday if at all possible. And you can certainly call me or meet if you have any questions about any of these things.
Anybody have any questions for Paul? Okay. Melissa? Okay.
There.
Oh, I'm sorry. Councilmember Camp. I looked down the line and I didn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking at the lights.
No, I just wanted to comment that last Thursday when we went through the exercise, Paul, this was very enlightening listening to some of the comments and as some of the work. And I just wanted to comment, commend you on it. Very good job. Thank you.
There were actually a number of people that wish they had more time.
Right.
Last Thursday night. So it was very good.
Thank you. Sorry, I've got lights up here that. Okay. Anything else, Councilmember Camp?
So was it.
We had a light malfunction over here. Okay. Brad.
I'm going to yield my time to Ben. I got the Brad glare because I was supposed to ask for
Ben, you get seconds on this?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So, as part of the 2015 budget, we have a managing engineer, the one new position that's paid out of Fred's capital improvement funds. As prepping for that placement, what we'd like to do is intern. We have two senior engineers The next logical step for one of them would be to move into the managing engineer. We would like to start to interview those candidates, internal applicants only, sooner than later. Those, assuming one of them gets the job, that they're full, we would then offer them the job after the final budget's been passed. We wouldn't move them until the budget's been finalized and adopted on December 9th. So,
and the reason why you'd like to do this now is because there's a notice procedure and a review procedure, and
yeah, there's a long time, and then we're, if this works out the way we would think it's going to, we're going to have to backfill for this engineer position with the TV starting up, where there's, we've got projects that we'd like them to start doing next year.
Yeah.
Council members have any concerns about
interview away? I mean, there's nothing to stop from that.
Okay. All right. So let's come on up here.
Still got to be voted for.
Oh, after. Okay. So for me, just a couple things. I was at the joint meeting on
Thursday.
Thank you. And we had a number of folks there from Parks and Planning and from the Citizens Advisory Committee. We also had folks from the audience that participated in the work as well. I then, with Una, went through the downtown on Saturday and met with folks, met with business owners, and talked with them about Light Up Monroe. That is, I think it was December 6th, if I've got the date correct. Oh, good. I heard it enough times, I was hoping I got it. And there's a rumor that Mike Dizzy is going to light his hair on fire. So,
huh?
Mr. Dizzy
is going to light his
hair on fire.
I'd verify that before putting that in the paper.
Yeah. He's going to be eaten by an anaconda or something.
Call Una. And then we were also talking about the Shop Local, which is the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So, Una is getting should be dropping off those posters this week for those events, and I think that's all that I have right now. Gene, why don't you go through the agendas and what your report is?
I do not have a report. Okay. Before us, we have the December 2nd, 2014 agenda. Principal Lombardi will be here from the Monroe High School doing a brief presentation and update. We have the consent agenda under unfinished business. We have coffee stand regulations, marijuana buffers, draft city web social media policy, resolution amending parking regulations, ordinance amending impact fee waivers, first reading. Under new business, we have ordinance adopting 2015 budget, first reading, excuse me. Ordinance amending 2014 budget, first reading. Ordinance regarding dangerous dogs, first reading. Resolution supporting staff's work on East Monroe project. Authorize mayor to sign municipal court judge contract. Approve 2015 lodging tax advisory committee grant awards. And we have discussion, sign code enforcement. Under final action, we have an ordinance adopting MMC 2.80 administrative authority. Final reading, and the Finance HR Committee will be reporting on the Salary Commission.
All right, Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I just would ask, you know, maybe Kevin, I know you made the motion for December 2nd. In light of our history on this particular thing where we wanted everybody present to vote, and since Councilmember Cuddebeck's not going to be there, and I last count, when I looked at there, it's every other hot topic that we have going right now on that agenda for the second. Maybe we either move yours to the ninth or vice versa. Something goes, because we're going to be here till 1 a.m. that day. So it's just mine.
Let me
crystal ball.
Let me suggest something, Councilmember Cuddebeck. One of the unfinished business items is city web social media policy. I know that's something that that we've been talking about since you're out that day. Would you like to move that to another day?
I would prefer it, but it's
a pleasure. Okay, do any council members have an issue with moving that to another Tuesday?
Move it.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and move that to either the 9th or the 16th. So I'll go ahead and ask staff to take a look at those agendas and figure out which one it works better on. Sound good? Okay. Anything else?
No,
that's only one item, but... Okay. All right. Councilmember Gehring and then Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Along the lines of Councilmember Hanford's action, I understand there is a lot. I think if looked sounded like there were four. I mean, everyone did have a chance to weigh in tonight. It's very clear where everybody stands on the issue. If we would be under a time crunch if we choose to move forward with going to the Growth Management Board to say, hey, we need an extension. I think sooner than later, if it sounded as though there were four, actually there were four that said that voted against the resolution tonight. I know we've said if everyone had not had a chance to weigh in, I think that would.
In all fairness, everybody had at that point. We often say that I wasn't here. I had already weighed in. Everybody
had. Councilmember Davis, though, that wasn't here. Actually,
his comments were read into the record.
They were. They were. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a chance to vote. So that was the point. Anyway, I'd like to see that on the second, if we could have that same agenda item. If we can move it, you know, does another week matter? Doing it on the 9th instead, it eats into more time. And I understand that you're not in favor of moving forward, and I respect that as well. We do have a lot of other stuff that night, but if there is a motion to rescind and the rescind is successful, then I would be requesting that we have a resolution as we saw tonight to let them know we are coming back and to specifically request for an extension. We would need to do that sooner than later. So if that is the action that, and it sounded as though that was where a majority of council members wanted to go, I think we need to do that sooner than later. So.
But before we move off that, I do want a clarification because I don't want there to be miscommunication again. Do we need a resolution?
I don't believe that a resolution is necessary in that context.
In that context, okay.
If the council's preference is to achieve compliance with the Growth Board's final decision and order by preparing a new supplemental EIS and to reenact the East Monroe Rezone and reclassification ordinances, what you would be doing necessarily is first authorizing the mayor and myself to work together to file a motion for an extension of the compliance deadline. I would reiterate that should happen sooner rather than later. If the council is planning on taking some type of a rescission vote at the December 2nd meeting, my recommendation would also be to have that motion authorizing the motion to extend time at the same meeting. And once that occurs, it triggers a process first to wait and see what the Growth Board does with our motion to extend the compliance deadline, assuming that that's granted, and hopefully it would be. At that point, it would proceed through the process of the SEIS, and then when that's finished, we would present that with a compliance brief to the Growth Board and attempt to obtain compliance that way. I don't believe that there's a need for a resolution separately at this time to notify the board of our intent to achieve compliance in that manner. I will verify that before the next meeting, one way or the other, but at this point, I don't believe that that's required.
And so if another council member would support it, I'd like to see a motion to reach out to the Growth Management Board for an extension, as the attorney described.
Yeah, second. Okay, so that'll be on the agenda as well.
Again, that would have to be after an action that Councilmember Hanford intends to take. Put it at the end or something, or wherever, an appropriate place on the agenda.
Okay. All right, anything else on that topic?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Councilmember Hanford, and then I'm not watching the lights.
All right.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I thank you, Councilmember Gamble, for bringing that up, and knowing that we've all weighed in on this, we've all discussed it. There's so much frustration as it is that it's not coming to a resolution. To put it off another week is I'm not interested in doing. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah, thank you. For the record, I'm completely in favor of moving it to the 9th. That way there is a full council. Part of the frustration is that the initial vote was broken in the tie because someone was not here. And that's part of the frustration. So, yeah, we're in a time crunch on that. A week to rescind it, ask for an extension, really isn't... Oh, it's 7 days. I mean, so I think it's for us to be consistent. We do postpone the intent to the 9th until we have a full council.
So would you yield for
a comment? Is everybody going to be here? I'm sorry. Yeah. Is
everybody going to be here? I'm in complete agreement with you. If we didn't have a clue as to exactly what everyone was going to vote in the way that they thought, it's pretty clear to me what people are thinking. So,
yeah, that was pretty clear on October 14th too, that passed 5-2. I mean, so, I mean, the votes changed since then. People were clear then. People are clear today. Some of that changed. I can't take that into consideration, respectfully. Because I think, yeah, the opinions have been made tonight. Everyone's clear tonight. Different than when it was a month ago. So I believe that we need a full council to stay consistent with this, avoid future frustrations on that piece of it. There's going to be frustrations no matter what, but that's just my opinion for what it's worth.
To that extent, I'll ask that be placed on the December 9th agenda if the second agrees with that.
For what?
Move it to the 9th instead. To request that item for the 9th instead of the second. If you're not in agreement with that, that's fine. If you are, then we'll accommodate whatever what's being asked for.
All right. I'll agree for the night. All right. I will publicly go on comment saying I think that's a complete waste of our time and a complete waste, but out of respect for Councilmember Cutterback and Councilmember Rasmussen, everyone else up here, I will agree.
I have Councilmember Camp and then Councilmember Cutterback. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. My next question is, will everyone be in attendance on December 9th?
At some point, we're going to take action. Yeah.
Well,
are people checking their calendars to confirm and respond? Okay. So, Councilmember Camp, are you waiting for a response?
I'm here.
Councilmember Gamble, are you here?
I've seen the response. Thank
you. Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
I just want to make it clear I did not ask for it to be moved to the 9th, so you might be doing it out of respect for me, but I did not ask for that. I know that other council members, Councilmember Gearing, and I think you at one point and others have insisted that the full council be around because this decision is so important. So that's nothing I asked for, but I've heard other council members ask for that.
Okay. All right. Anything else on the agenda? The notice for the motion to rescind is now reflecting that will be December 9th, and that there will be following that, or as part of that, as a second potential action, the motion to extend to the Growth Management Hearings Board, which was referenced earlier. Are there any other questions about next week's agenda? Are there any other questions about the extended agenda? Okay. Seeing none, we do have need for an executive session. This is related to pricing of property. This is RCW 42301101C. and we're going to estimate 5 minutes and with action to follow.
Beauty.
Okay, before a motion is made, I would like to... Okay, before a potential motion is made, our attorney would like to share one thing related to the notice to rescind that was discussed earlier. So,
Council, I understand the council's preference to have the motion to rescind be heard and voted on December 9th meeting. Out of an abundance of caution, my recommendation would be for Councilman Hanford to reiterate that point and his intent to bring the motion on the 9th at the meeting of the 2nd. And the reason for that is that we're going to give advance notification of a motion to rescind. Robert's Rules of Order technically contemplate that notice will be given at the previous meeting.
That's a good point.
And again, I think that this is an abundance of caution approach, a very conservative approach, but given the gravity with which the council is viewing this issue and the importance of attempting to bolster and bulletproof the city's process as much as possible, and my recommendation would be to take that extra step on the 2nd.
Are there any questions on that?
No.
Okay. With that, Councilmember Camp, your light's on.
Thank you. Mayor, I have three motions. I move to amend the agenda to add resolution number 024/2014.
Second.
Okay, the first from Councilmember Camp, second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to approve resolution number 024/2014, authorizing the sale of certain real property to Robert H. Ford.
Second.
A first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next.
Thank you, Mayor. One more motion. I move to adjourn.
Second.
Let somebody else.
Okay, first from Councilmember Camp, second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0. Thank you for your service. Have a great evening.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Well. Next
week.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Councilmember Hanford.
Wow.
Is there a therapy this
Okay. And they play fundamentally.